Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA Show!
Back in your life on this Monday, September 24, 2018. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome back to the program, and what a great day we have planned for all of you. Boy, oh boy, do we have a lot to talk about today. Holy smokes. So much has happened since we last spoke. John Jones is back. Conor and Khabib finally faced off. There's main events happening all over the place. Main events getting signed. Joanna Valentina. Remember that one? Flyweight title, Toronto. Sao Paulo happened. Eric Anders loses to Thiago Santos. Bellator had a great event on Friday. We're on the road to the biggest event, arguably, in Bellator history. We're on the road to UFC 229. There is so much going on. We have a jam-packed show for all of you. I can't wait for today's show. I love today's lineup. It's going to be a lot of fun. Please, trust me on this one. It's going to be a lot of fun. As always, we appreciate everyone who's tuning in live on Twitter. Live.twitter.com/ESPN is where you can watch the program live after the fact. You can get it on iTunes, Stitcher, the ESPN app, also on YouTube. All those places and more, you know the drill by now. Before we move along with the program, at the very top, just wanted to say that I wanted to dedicate today's program to the memory of both Norifumi Kid Yamamoto, who passed away on Monday, one of the greatest of all time, a Japanese legend who unfortunately succumbed to stomach cancer in his prime, arguably one of the pound-for-pound best. And when he was at the top of his game, mid-ish early 2000s, there was no one better. And of course, there was talk of him fighting Uriah Faber. That dream matchup, it never came to fruition. Came to the UFC, but it was a little bit past his prime. Unfortunately, at I believe 41, he passed away. He had stomach cancer, spoke to a couple people who were with him towards the end, and it was just devastating. So wanted to dedicate this to the memory of the great Kid Yamamoto, and also wanted to dedicate today's program to the memory of Glenn Robinson, the founder of the Black Zillions, who also passed away tragically late last week due to a heart attack. He was 50 years young, always was great to the media, always very accessible. Somewhat polarizing in the sport, brought together a team of free agents, if you will, paid them a lot of money. In the end, he was a little less involved in the world of MMA, but still had some guys that he was representing. Spoke to him recently about Tywon Claxton over in Bellator, was very high on him. Of course, represented the likes of Rashad Evans and Anthony Johnson and Tyrone Spong, and at one point, Eddie Alvarez. He was a major player in this sport, and unfortunately, he passed away as well. We'll talk to Rashad Evans, actually, about him and his memory and his legacy later in the program. So just wanted to, unfortunately, have to do that at the top of the show, but wanted to dedicate today's program to both of their legacies and memories as well. All right, so what is happening on today's program? Well, like I said, we have a lot to discuss. We have a lot of people to talk to, so let me run down today's lineup. And then we shall get to our first guest of the day, who I am oh so excited to talk to. I haven't talked to this man in quite some time. This is very nice. 3:30, we're going to be joined in studio by the great Kayla Harrison. It was reported by our own Brett Okamoto on Wednesday, I do believe, of ESPN.com that she is re-signing with PFL. She's going to be a part of a 155-pound women's tournament next year. 155, not 145, 155. She's going to be in studio. PFL has their first ever playoff on October 5th, and she'll talk a little bit about that. Being involved in the tournament next year, her first two pro fights. Remember, I had her on the old program in studio. She was a phenomenal interview. I'm looking forward to talking to her. Eric Anders will stop by at 3:20, talk to him about the main event and the uncomfortable scene at the end of that fight, end of the third round. Can't walk, collapses, seemed to be in really rough shape. And I just want to know how he's feeling. Spoke to him a bit on text, taking the fight on 6 days' notice. You'll recall we spoke to him at the top of last week's show. And he was eager to fight, negotiated a little bit, but seemed down to take the fight. It seemed maybe that the very, very, very short, if at all, training camp got him. Thiago Santos is a super tough fighter, who's a very hard puncher, and fought very well in that fight. It was a fight between two middleweights fighting at light heavyweight, and just the scene at the end of him collapsing a couple times, tough to watch, so wanted to check in with him. At 3:05, we'll talk to Misha Tate. She has a bit of news to share with all of us. Haven't talked to her since she became a mother. How beautiful is that? At 2:50, I am pleased to say that the great Tony McGregor, the father of one Conor McGregor, will be stopping by. What a legend Tones is, and he is all over the news in Ireland these days. He had a viral video last month of him complaining about the dart system giving him too much coinage because he wears a slim fit, custom-made Hugo Boss suit, and that has turned into a sponsorship for Mr. McGregor. I love talking to him. He'll stop by at 2:50, 2:35. We'll talk to Rashad Evans about Glenn Robinson, as I mentioned. 2:20, we'll talk to Rory McDonald, who meets Gegard Mousasi on Saturday in the biggest fight in Bellator history, the middleweight title. We'll talk to him at 2:20. Francis Ngannou will stop by. There's always stuff to talk about with Francis Ngannou. Of course, he returns to action on November 24th against Curtis Blaydes to main event that show in China. And this is a rematch, of course, of a fight that happened several years ago. Alexander Gustafsson will stop by at 1:50, talk about his desire to fight John Jones, I presume. And we'll also talk about UFC 230 and the search for that main event. Malki Kawa at 1:25, talk about John Jones, a little Tyron Woodley action, all that and then some. But first, let us go to the phone lines and talk to one of my favorite people in this business. I miss working with this man oh so dearly. He is the host of the brand new Eurobash podcast over at MMAfighting.com, my former teammate there. In my opinion, the best journalist in Europe, the best journalist as far as Irish MMA is concerned, the number one guy who knows all things Conor McGregor, all things Irish MMA, all things Euro MMA, the guru, if you will, the incomparable, Peter, a.k.a. Pete C. Carroll, joins us right now. Top of the show. How about this? Pete C., how are you?
How's tricks, Ariel? Very happy to be on. How are you, buddy?
What's the crack? Long time no speak. This is great. World's colliding. We're back for one day.
I know. I know. What an honor it is. How's tricks with you? You doing well, yeah?
Everything's okay. I don't know if you heard, but I moved. I have a new home now, but I still love you and everyone over at MMA Fighting. I miss you guys dearly. Miss working with you all. Miss having you at my disposal as a teammate and, of course, as a guru for all things Irish and Euro MMA. And that's where I want to start. There's no time to waste. There's a big fight. I don't know if you heard this, but there's a big fight coming up on October 6th involving Khabib Nurmagomedov and Conor McGregor for the UFC lightweight title. And it has been a quiet buildup up until last Thursday. Press conference in New York. It was heated. There was a lot that happened. Let me ask you, as we discuss on this Monday about this fight that is, what, 12 days away now, describe to me the buzz, the interest, the hype in Ireland for the return of Conor McGregor, his first MMA fight in almost 2 years, compared to some of the other big fights that he's been a part of over the past couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very fractured reaction. I mean, I think for the most part, the MMA fan base absolutely expected Conor to come out and, you know, give us that big spectacle and sell the fight. But as usual, like the national media, you know, kind of pointed at it being fakery, you know, that it's over the top, it isn't real, it's manufactured. I personally, my phone went crazy, like, all the way through it. And this is the first time I personally had, like, a big negative reaction to it. Not me, but people getting onto me and kind of saying, oh, this is awful, you know, this is embarrassing and stuff like that. So, I mean, that is the first time I've really had that, like a press conference, like with people actually reaching out to me. But I think the general sense is, you know what I mean, that the Irish people might not have the same skin in the game that they had for that run back in Mendes and Aldo. Like, that's how, like, everybody in Ireland was going to those fights. And to be honest, I haven't met one person who's going to this fight in Ireland, apart from people who are working at it and people who are on the team, Team McGregor, of course. I do still think everybody's interested. You can tell that from the reaction. I mean, everybody's talking about it. But I just don't feel like it has the same national urgency that it had on that initial run towards, you know, getting his first UFC titles.
Why do you think that is?
You know, it's a lot of different things. Like, I mean, I can only speculate, really. Like, I think the silence has a lot to do with it. You know, the fact that we haven't heard much from him. You know, in the past, Conor's had such big calls to action. And he really felt like he was, like, the symbol of Irishness. Like, people are holding him up as, like, nearly like a mythological creature. You know what I mean? Like, this guy is like something from the past. He is the Irish identity. And that's like that's something Conor didn't ask for. That was something that the people put on him. Every time when he bet Mendez and everybody was over there, it felt like a huge moment. People used to talk about that like and still do, like that was our Italian 90. Basically what that was, every generation of Irish seems to have one sporting moment that they consider the greatest moment of their generation. And I think for the people who are there and the people who are watching and the people who are engaged, that run that Conor had with Aldo and Mendez was that. So it's an incredibly hard thing to uphold, and I imagine it's an awful lot of pressure for someone like Conor. And that's kind of faded away. Like we see people basically, even when he won those titles against Mendez and Aldo, the national press were kind of saying, well, this sport is a joke, and this guy, he's just a loudmouth. And we saw so many people rushing to defend him then, to say, hang on, you guys don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what this sport is. You don't understand what this man has done. And basically, you know, since then, obviously in the last year, there's been some big public showings, like controversial stuff, starting in Gdansk, and then it went to the Bellator in Dublin where he scaled the fence and went into the cage. And then, of course, it all comes to a head in Brooklyn with the bus incident. And, you know, all the people who have been saying those things about Conor, it made it very hard to defend Conor for the people who are so diehard from him, I think. And as much as everybody's turning on, they're definitely going to watch this fight. More than ever, I think everybody's going to watch this fight because he's probably more polarizing than ever. I just don't feel like they have the same, importance as a national, like for Ireland, as those two did. And I think that would be very hard to do because that was like nothing I or many sports journalists have ever seen before.
So I saw a lot of people after, and that's great insight. Thank you for that. I saw a lot of people afterwards say, you know, it seemed like he was trying too hard. He was trying to get under Khabib's skin. He was too colorful. He was out of control, et cetera, et cetera. But you think back to the press conference before 205 when he's wearing the coat. I mean, he was just as colorful then. He's been colorful before. I didn't really see a difference. Yes, this time, you know, he was taking an opportunity here and there to plug the whiskey, but I didn't see much of a difference in the Conor McGregor on stage last Thursday than some of the other Conor McGregors we've seen in the past. Maybe he was trying to overcompensate a little bit for the fact that there was no audience there, and I think that was a mistake on the UFC's part, security reasons. They probably wanted to just be safe, and I get it. But do you feel like this was a different Conor on the stage than the one we've seen in the past?
No, I agree with you. Like, I mean, this is what I anticipated, and the reactions were, you know, it was quite strange to have people just randomly reaching out to me like that. But that still shows that there is a massive emotional investment here. And that is really all that matters in the fight game. Like, if you are moved one way or the other and you move to watch this fight in any way, shape or form, he's winning. That's what he wanted to do there. And that's exactly what he did. I don't know if it's a case of, you know, is it harder for a Joe Public to love a wealthy man rather than a guy that's trying to climb the ladder and a guy that's trying to pursue these things? It could be something to do with that, you know what I mean? Like when I say, like, this is the reaction, like, he definitely still has a massive, like, a diehard fan base. Like, I saw guys on Facebook, like, friends, like, threatening to beat each other up over who they thought was going to win the fight about 10 minutes after that press conference ended. So, I mean, there's still definitely that. But it just doesn't feel like it's the same as in across the board, like, you know what I mean? Like, I think over 10,000 people went to that Mendez and Aldo fight. He is a global commodity now. He's a global icon. And maybe, you know, the silence, the fact that usually when he speaks, he's speaking about Ireland, we've only got to see him at this press conference. He usually has those big calls to action. And maybe the more we see him as this fight goes on, we're going to have that. Maybe people will have that sense of nationality associated with Conor as it pushes towards the fight. Because that's the thing, like, the more we see of him, the more interest there always is going to be. And as you said, like, there has been pretty much a blanket silence from the camp ahead of this fight.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think the camp has been so quiet?
I guess it's to do with the issues stemming from the bus incident. You know what I mean? It seems to be deeper than we can all fathom. Like, especially, like, the one thing about the press conference that was very interesting to me was Conor bringing up, Chechen-Dagestani relations.
Yeah.
That shows that this guy is very much preparing. Like, he prepared for that moment. And that's really the first indication that we have of him being really vested in this fight, which I think is a good sign, you know. Whether people liked what he was saying or not, it did show us that he is committed to this fight 100%.
Yeah, it's been very interesting to see how there's been so few interviews from not just Conor and Khabib. That was the first time essentially that they've talked, a couple of TMZ spots here and there, my guy Adam Glenn catching them on the street, but for the most part, not much. In fact, they didn't do any interviews after the press conference as well. They both bolted. And you bring up to me what was the most interesting part of that press conference, and it was Conor's comments about Vladimir Putin, about Ramzan Kadyrov, about Khabib's manager, Ali Abdelaziz. This man does his research unlike any other. He doesn't just show up to a press conference sitting back and waiting for the media to ask him questions. He comes prepared with information and research, and he does that better than anyone. I remember last year leading up to the Floyd Mayweather fight, he's walking around with a Golden State Warriors jersey, number 23, CJ Watson, and no one understood really what he was doing with that jersey. Draymond Green thought that it was his jersey. In fact, yeah, it was connected to Floyd's past with his former partner, etc. We spoke about that at length. He just goes to a whole other level. Do you feel at any point in the comments pertaining to that stuff, the political stuff, Dagestan, Chechnya, that he crossed the line? Were you surprised that he went there?
No, it wasn't, because he had a kind of hinted at this on Instagram already. If you remember, he kind of pointed towards one of Khabib's teammates that was a Chechen, and he's kind of saying, well, a Chechen's helping a Dagestani that was, you know, in a Dagestani-led attack, I believe it was. So I did feel like that was going to feature along the way. But, I mean, you mentioned earlier about it being a bad idea for the UFC to have fans there. Like, I'm just saying, for instance, if Khabib had turned around to Conor and said, you know, like, oh, well, the English ran the Irish off the hills of Galway or something. Like, I mean, I think the place would have exploded. Like, I don't know what would have happened then. You know, like, honestly, like, I think that could have been a crazy scene if that was full of Irish people like we've seen before. And we know how Conor captivates them. Like, he's like the Pied Piper of this sport over here. And he has such a big reaction. So, I mean, I think that could have went sour. But, of course, it wasn't Khabib who was saying those things. But at the same time, this is what Conor does that nobody else does. He's constantly rewarded for these kind of things. So why would Conor do anything else? Like, I mean, we're 6 months ago, Dana White's telling us that this man committed the most disgusting act in UFC history. And now they're using it as the main promotion for the fight.
Yeah.
He's constantly being rewarded for this, and he's constantly gaining more wealth off this. So, I mean, what do you want the guy to do? Like, you know, you can't, you're sending him mixed messages, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, he has carte blanche. Did you see the moment Dana White posted this on his Instagram? His social media was picked up in a few places, but I didn't see many people bring it up. And I think the fact that he said it, and I think the fact that it wasn't a big story, tells us everything that we need to know about UFC belts in 2018. Right before they're about to square off, Dana turns to someone off to the side and says, get Conor's belts. Get Conor's belts, the two belts that you stripped him of, the featherweight and lightweight title. Get Conor's belts to square off. And
he's
that's
quite animated.
Yeah, that's what sparked the whole Ali thing. But, like, get Conor's belt. It's one thing for Conor to show up saying, I'm going to bring my belts. It's one thing for Colby Covington. But if the president of the UFC is actually summoning someone to get those belts, it just tells you that the whole thing was a bit of a sham. And then the fact that this wasn't really picked up and made into a story, they publicized the fact that they were stripping him, tells you how fans feel about these belts. Get Conor's belts. If I'm Khabib, if I'm Max Holloway, I'm fired up. I'm livid over this, no?
Yeah, no, absolutely. But, I mean, this is constantly the way they do things. You know, Conor is an anomaly. He is a global icon now. This is what I keep... He is global. He's a global commodity, far more than an Irish commodity now. Like, I mean, he is so important to them. And you can tell that by the way they've bent over backwards to get this new contract, which basically just means he's going to have the proper 12 logo on the canvas. Like, I mean, it feels like they'll do anything for him. And it was only when he came back. And Sean Sheehan of Severe MMA made a great point. He said, like, it feels like MMA's been on a hiatus. And that's exactly what it felt like. It felt like, oh, we're back again. It felt like everybody in Ireland stopped watching MMA the day Conor beat Eddie Alvarez. And now they're all back. So they're basing their complete understanding. For the vast majority of people in Ireland are basing their complete understanding of MMA off Conor McGregor press conferences, what Conor does outside the cage, and when Conor fights. You know what I mean? That is all they have. But, you know, like, this is the thing. This is, like, I mean, we only have to look at, like, public perception. Like, it's a game of what have you done lately. Look at Tiger Woods last night. You know what I mean? Conor comes out and he beats Khabib. He's going to be, like, a mythological creature again in Ireland. He's going to be, like, Sean McCool or Two Cullens come back again. He can't be touched. Like, that's just the way it works. And that's the way it will work if he does manage to get that win. I really do think that. And I think Dane is the same. I think he's an all.
Conor's accent, was it a little different this time around? And I understand that he was actually using some sort of, like, Dublin slang. Could you tell us more about that?
Well, yeah, you see, it's funny. Like, I mean, the guy can't win. People used to kind of flag the way that he wasn't talking like he should talk as a Dublin man. You know, because he was enunciating words, he was pronouncing things, he was very clear with his speech, he dictated things very well. And, like, that all made perfect sense in terms of a guy that, you know, probably had massive endorsements, you know, coming his way. It makes it a lot easier when you don't talk like me. You know, but he was far more Dublin there, absolutely. It's kind of like people in Dublin, like, I mean, it would be like the working class people that speak like that a lot more, you know what I mean? It wouldn't be, so maybe that triggered a few people as well.
But what about the sayings?
The Irish, oh, yeah. The saying is funny, right? Because I went into town for a bit of socializing on Friday.
Oh.
And everybody just shouted at each other in the streets. Like, everyone's going, "Oh, Will Kelly, go Dougherty and Larry's air on bus." Like, you know, that was the big takeaway from that event. Like, that's, "Can I go to the toilet, please?" on the bus. But every child that goes to primary school in Ireland has to learn that. You have to ask to go to the bathroom in Irish. For some reason, it was always the way it was. But since I was, like, 5 years old in school, you had to do it. So, I mean, that... But, like, in fairness to Conor, he was actually a Gaelic. Like, he could speak fluent Irish at one point. I can remember just at the Aldo... the World Tour leg of the Aldo fight in March 2015 in Ireland, he kind of said, "Well, look, I've forgotten now." It's not like he's been working that muscle a lot, so... I guess that was the first thing that came to his head when he was challenged about not knowing his national language.
How's his whiskey doing there? Proper 12. Is it that big of a deal?
Man, it is crazy.
Really?
Like, I'm not, like, it is insane. It's viral. Like, I mean, everybody's talking about it.
Wow.
You know, like, that seems to be the big takeaway from that press conference. I think that was another thing that didn't go well with the mainstream media over here. They just saw it as a press conference to sell us whiskey rather than sell us wine for the most part, I think. But, yeah, unbelievable. It's everywhere. I said on Twitter, basically, when we had a big storm there earlier in the year, and basically pictures of bread just started going viral because someone got it into their head that there would be a shortage of bread and water. So everybody's going out and tweeting their pictures of bread and water. This is all over the country. And the only thing that I've seen close to this is Conor's proper 12 since then. So, I mean, that's okay. Got off to a fantastic start, I'd imagine.
Yeah, his timing of coming out with that on the Monday, using the press conference to promote it, and then, of course, you know, having it a part of this fight was just absolutely brilliant. Do you feel comfortable with the question of who do you think is going to win this fight? Are you comfortable giving us a prediction?
Yeah, absolutely. And I can tell you, like, straight off the bat, I think the best version of Conor McGregor beats the best version of Khabib Nurmagomedov. That's where I'll start with this. But the question is the same Conor McGregor that fought Eddie Alvarez 2 years ago, is he going to show up in Las Vegas? And that's the question. And I think how big of a celebrity Conor is taking away from people looking at this fight in terms of the contest in Ireland anyway. You know, they think when Conor fights, he wins, basically. You know, even though the Diaz thing happened, he came back and he won that. But there's a few red flags for me. Like he's been on the sidelines for 2 years. Like, we generally don't see guys coming back and performing at their best after such a gap. We've also had, you know, three big controversial incidents with Conor. Like, you know, starting in Dansk, then it went to the Bellator incident scaling the fence, and then obviously the bus incident. In those moments, Conor didn't look like a guy who was really committed to the fight game at their moments, you know what I mean? As well as that, he just launched a massive business venture. like a couple of weeks before the fight. That would suggest to me that he would have to take time out of his training schedule to get something like this off the ground, you know what I mean? And then, you know, this is something that nobody's talking about. He was having a few drinks on Thursday at the press conference. Why is not, like, I mean, that's not what you should be doing when you're preparing for a fight.
Are you picking Khabib Nurmagomedov? Is that what's happening here?
I'm leaning towards Khabib, yeah.
Wow.
I gotta say, but I do, like, I'm not shocked. Like, I don't think it's a definite. I think Conor can absolutely do it. If the best version of Conor shows up, he can do it. But we haven't heard anything from him. Usually, ahead of his fight, they're talking to his camp. They're telling you. You feel like you've got a good feel for it. It's very, you know, it's silent. It's hard to know what's going on there. And look, he is the guy that will, you know, put egg all over my face. He is the guy that does that. He's proved people wrong. He's made a whole career out of proving people wrong. So he absolutely could. I think it's way closer than most people are talking about. Like, you know what I mean? That's the one fear I have. And I think his silence hasn't helped him in that, because usually when he speaks, he has this incredible power to make people believe. Incredible. I have never seen a man who can make people believe the way he does. And that's how he managed to kind of energize the whole nation in this time of recession. He was a guy going out, doing what he wanted to do, scaling to the top of a sport that nobody had ever heard of, and then everybody suddenly had an opinion of over here. That's what he can do, and that's what I think the worst thing about the silence was. We don't really know where he's at. You know what I mean? So at the moment, I'm leaning towards Khabib. I've done like 40 shows talking about Conor and Khabib and picking, and I think I've done the day he released that 30-second clip of him training. Like, that's showing me, to some extent, more than anything so far, oh, there he is training. He looks like the old guy. And that day I was going, like, holy shit, like, it's Conor. It's the same guy. And I think I did a show that day and I picked Conor. That's how he can turn the public opinion. So, yeah, I'm leaning towards Khabib at the moment, but I wouldn't be surprised at all. I think it's a way closer fight. And I think, to be honest, when we see more of the camp in the lead-up to the fight on that fight week, I could change my mind again.
Yeah.
Just based on what they're saying and what they're saying. But at the moment, it's you know, there are a few red flags, but, like, that's how I'm feeling, yeah. Is that crazy? Or is that just the way of listening?
That just proves, if anyone ever had any doubt, that just proves how unbiased you are. People would think, oh, he's Irish, he's going to lean towards Conor. That's why we love you, PT. Phenomenal insight, great stuff. Check out the Eurobash podcast. Every Tuesday comes out on MMAfighting.com. Check out his work, my colleagues' work over there as well. They do a phenomenal job. Love those guys, and I love you as well, PT. Thank you so much for doing this. I appreciate the insight, and enjoy the fight on October 6th.
Thank you, Bull. Great to speak to you always.
My pleasure. Great to have you on the show. There he is, my main man, PT Carroll. Now, before we move along to our next guest, let me tell you about our good friends over at Stamps.com. These days, you can get practically everything on demand, like this show, on demand. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. Did you know you can even get postage on demand? All you need is Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the services of the post office right from your desk. Buy and print real U.S. postage for any letter or any package, all available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and voila, you're done. Stamps.com will even send you a digital scale. How cool is that? You can weigh your letters and packages and print the exact amount of postage every time. I've used them before, easy as can be. I suck at the internet, doing things on your own. If there's a light bulb that needs to be changed, I need someone to do it for me. And trust me, figuring out how to do stamps on your own seemed daunting. It ain't. It's amazing. Trust me. Easy as 1, 2, 3. Stamps.com. So, right now, use the code MMA for this special offer. You get a 4-week trial, which includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in MMA. That's stamps.com. Enter MMA. Support them because they support us. Now let us move along to our next guest. Big week for him last week. His guy, Johnny Bones, 15-month suspension. He is back as of October 28th. He is the one and only Malky Cowboy. He joins us now on the phone. Malky, how are you? You like that read? Got sponsors now, baby. GDP rolling in that dough.
I mean, hey, listen, congratulations, buddy. You're doing your thing.
Thank you.
Can't complain when that happens.
I know you would appreciate that. Malky, congratulations on a big week. Are you happy
with USADA. I should say the arbitrator's decision, 15-month suspension. Are you happy? Are you content with this?
I mean, considering the circumstances and how this whole thing was playing out, yes, because it's basically done and over with. In reality, I think, you know what I mean, it should have never happened in the first place. You know what I mean? I keep saying it, like, you know, I think that, first off, I think, you know, let me just say this. I think USADA did an excellent job of really investigating the circumstances around this situation. I think they did a very thorough, deep dive into everything. You know what I mean? And everyone around and the whole nine and all that. And, I said it from day one. I said John was innocent. I said John didn't cheat. He doesn't cheat. I know this to be a fact. So I knew that we were going to get a good result at the end of the day anyway. But at the same time, you know what I mean? I think the one flaw that this system has is that if you're not, you know, intending to cheat, if you took a tainted supplement or if there's, you know, some circumstances in the, you know, to me, this should be about the cheaters and the guys who are trying to get an advantage, not the people that are, you know, that take a substance that they think is clean or that is clean, let's say, you know, based on the label and all that, and then it turns to be tainted or, you know, contaminated with something, and then guys get punished. And that's where, you know, I have a problem with this program. But other than that, you know what I mean? Because in my mind, you know, listen, it's the same thing as if you said, hey, man, this guy was accused of murder and he got out of 15 months. Are you happy and content with that? It's like, hey, listen, instead of the life sentence he was looking at, absolutely. Yeah. But he should have never been, you know, in jail in the first place. And that's kind of like, you know, where I'm at. But I have to give, you know, USADA some leeway on this one. It took a long time. And I think, you know, that's why this is just, you know, played out as long as it did, because if they would have been able to conclude this 8 months ago, I think we would have been looking at an 8 month suspension, 1 year suspension, and calling it a day.
Why did it take so long?
It just there was just a lot to it. They have to really be thorough in a lot of the things that they did. You know what I mean? So everything was being looked at, and I appreciate it actually, because there was a lot of different things that they had to look at to make sure that it was that, you know, what we were telling them and what John was doing or the things that they were finding out were actually, you know, the truth.
Okay, so this is the second time that you go to arbitration with John, and both times seems like a pretty favorable result. Although, as opposed to the first time, this one was very hush hush. You posted one picture in hindsight that we come to realize was the day that you guys were there, but you didn't publicize it. You didn't want to make a big deal until after. Why did you guys do it so under the table?
Well, because a lot of the time people don't understand that USADA isn't so. It's not like. There's really no rhyme or reason for a lot of the things that get done, right? So, like, in other words, here's a suspension, and then you can work it back down based on... So, if you're guilty until you prove yourself innocent, it's not the other way around, right? So, it's not like you go in and you explain the whole situation, and then somebody comes up and says, all right, well, for this offense, I think this person should have, you know, a 3-month suspension. It's basically, you get caught on this, it's 2 years. Second time, it's 4 years. Third time, it's lifetime. And you have to work backwards. So, when you go into the media, and I'm very deliberate when I do that, you know what I mean? I did it earlier on when I said, hey, listen, if USADA is a respectable organization, you know what I mean? I think that, you know, they'll find John innocent. If this is really a fair process, he'll be innocent. I know him to be innocent. And, this, you know, I think, I don't remember who was that asked me, said, you know, what percentage chance do you think we'll see him by the end of the year? I said 95%. And the whole world went crazy. It went down, you know, on the bottom of ESPN. And everybody was like, holy crap, you know, this guy's, you know, saying something that at that moment, I was really just going off of my gut instinct on the fact that I know that John Jones is innocent. So I always knew in my heart that it would come out at some point. But when you start getting into the media and you start kind of using the media to put pressure, you know, you can get an arbitrator that can sit there and look at it and say, well, yeah, you might be right, but I'm not going to fold because the media is saying that he's going to come back. So I just decided just to take the quiet route this time and just let it play out. I just knew in my heart it was the best way to go.
Okay, so... As you know, and I think you addressed this a little bit, a lot has come out over the fact that he got a massive reduction in his suspension because it seems as though there's an agreement that he would either give information up about other people in the future or has given up information. People have called him a snitch, a rat, all these things and more. Can you clarify this?
Yeah.
Did this actually happen?
No, so I'm not going to get into the details of that because I feel like, you know, what I'd be doing by doing that is giving more credence to the people who started these rumors. John's going to end up doing an interview very soon, and John can sit there and explain everything that happened in this whole thing, me coming out and just, oh, yeah. I can just tell you without a shadow of a doubt that John did not tell on any teammate. John did not tell on anyone in MMA. John did not do anything that these people are saying he did. So all this, he's a snitch and all that stuff, I can just tell you right now, we can put it to bed. He did not do that. So there's other things that took place in here. There's other things that John did with himself. There's things that USADA and the arbitrator and everyone involved, you know what I mean, got from John about John that they had never had before. So, you know, there's a lot of things that took into consideration. So, in reality, Ariel, when people sit here and just want to, you know, spew off because they use the term substantial assistance, and then they immediately said, oh, he's telling on someone, it's 1,000% false. John did not do that.
Okay, what about in the future? Like, is there an agreement to work with them on other things, on giving information about other people? How does that go?
Again, I'm not too, you know, a lot of people were saying that was what was reported in there and this is the thing that he had to do or not do. I'm not, to be honest with you, I'm not sure about that part. You know what I mean? So I don't know where that came from or anything to that effect. The thing is, if it's on, you know, steroids and all this other stuff they're talking about, John doesn't have any information about that stuff. So, you know, the funny thing about that whole thing was they're saying, oh, because, you know, somebody tweeted something to the effect of, like, you know, anybody at Jackson's better be, you know, scared. And when I saw it, I started laughing because it's not like John sits in a room somewhere and watches people do steroids. And then he was like, hey, man, guess what? My teammate over here is doing steroids. He doesn't do that. John goes, he trains, gets his stuff, and he goes home. You know what I mean? Doesn't take a shower there. He doesn't really hang out there. You know, he comes in, he does his thing, and he leaves. So he doesn't really, you know, sit there and hang out like that or would know about anyone that does that. So when people sit there and say these things, to me, it's just like, it's a funny thing. I just have to go back and look at the agreement and understand what they mean by that. So I'm assuming if John's name was to come up in something and he was to know something, he would have to, you know what I mean, be cooperative with them.
Yeah.
But it was I don't know of a deal where it's like, hey, you know, we're going to continue to do this. I don't know about that. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, that's not how it went down. So, again, I don't want to assume anything or say something wrong. I don't want this to turn, you know, into a disaster now all of a sudden. But, you know, from what I understand, you know, a lot of the stuff that they're talking about had to do with him, not with other people.
Do you have any idea where it came from at this point? Because I know in February when you met with California, he didn't know. And my understanding from reading it, still don't know. And they believe that he didn't take anything knowingly. They explicitly say that, that he didn't try to cheat, etc. But have you pinpointed that supplement or whatever else was in his system that led to this?
I mean, you know, we have an assumption on some stuff, but we don't have a pinpoint thing. The I think one of the biggest things that helped us in this situation was the fact that the amount of this stuff that was in his system was equivalent to taking a pinch of salt and throwing it into an Olympic sized swimming pool. So there was no advantage gained. You follow where I'm coming from? There was no signs of doping. He passed all his other tests. So to be honest with you, Ariel, like, you know, it was such a small amount. It could have been anything. And that's the crazy thing about it. It could have been something that was put on his food. It was something that could have been in a supplement that one particle of it was contaminated. You never know what it could have been. So I don't want to speculate. We have an assumption. We just don't know for sure. That's just really what it is.
How do we avoid this now? How do we avoid this never happening again? What are the steps that are being taken to avoid that?
Well, you know, what's surprising is that if you go back and read the arbitrator's award letter, we actually put a lot of steps in place, right? So everything John took, you know, we researched the labels. We sent them to Jeff Nowitzki. Jeff Nowitzki gave us the green light, red light. And when I say green light, red light, I know there was another part in there that said, you know, USADA approved as opposed to being, you know, high risk versus low risk. So to make it simple for a lot of our clients, you know, what we'll say is, you know, hey, this is approved to be taken. Like, in other words, it's been approved through the channels, the proper channels. Nothing is guaranteed 100% safe. Even the stuff with the check mark on it, that's Informed Sport or the whatever, I don't remember the two names of the companies that do the third-party testing. That doesn't really guarantee you anything, right? So what you're showing when you do these things is that your degree of fault in a case is very low because you're trying your best not to have this happen. And that was something that John was able to do in his in this thing. So he hired a nutritionist who came with 1,000 different certifications, degrees, everything there. Everything he took was looked at by us first, then by Jeff Nowitzki. Everything came back as safe to take, right? And John didn't do any of the other stuff that he's, you know, done in the past, like the over the counter pills and stuff like that. So everything that we know to do, he did, and this thing still happened. You follow where I'm coming from? Mm-hmm. So going forward, outside of him not just taking any supplements at all, you know what I mean, we're hoping that everything, we're going to go down the same thing again. We're going to use stuff that's third-party tested. We're going to, you know, put the protocols in place. He knows not to take anything without letting us know about it first. We obviously send it to Nowitzki and the people over at the, you know, control stuff at the control the USADA program at the UFC, and have them review just so this is a set, second set of eyes. Get it, you know, in writing that, hey, this is, you know, a low-risk supplement, because you still take, there's still a level of risk by taking supplements. Even if it's just fish oil, there's still a level of risk. So, and then we just go from there.
One of the interesting byproducts of this whole thing has been people saying, you know what, USADA, I'm done with you. Daniel Cormier saying, I'm done with you. And I've always thought that, yes, it's great to have drug testing, but the fact that the fighters never had a say in any of this, 24/7, 365, the whereabouts, all that and more, is problematic. There's no collective bargaining. You know, as one of the most powerful managers in the game, as someone who works with a lot of very important and successful NFL players and building that business as well, is it time for the fighters to take a hard look at the USADA deal in the UFC?
Yeah, but I mean, you see, Ariel, it's just like every other situation with the UFC. Whether it's money, whether it's insurance, whether it's USADA, whether it's, you know, ranking system, there's always, you get the majority. So when it first came out, the majority of the fighters were, oh my God, this is great, we're going to clean up the sport, blah, 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 right? And then everybody wanted to just give everybody the death penalty. Joel Romero was the very first one, right? Just, oh, he's cheating. Look at his body. He's 40 years old. It's impossible. It has to be cheating. And then we go down that route with USADA. You know, his case is one case that I regret not taking to arbitration.
Who, Joel?
Knowing what I know today, yeah.
Okay.
Knowing what I know today, Joel would have probably gotten time served or, you know what I mean, an extra month on top of whatever month we were at that day. USADA went and tested this. We tested his supplement, right? It was tainted with the thing that he popped for. USADA went to the manufacturer and bought it directly from them. Not like I gave them more product. They went and bought bottles on their own, and it was contaminated then as well. And originally, until we hired a lawyer, right, they were trying to hit us with a year, and then it was 7 months, 8 months. And then when we got Howard Jacobs involved, it turned to 6 months. And, you know, going through that experience, having to go to arbitration, the way the arbitration is set up to where you got to pay all these things and do all this different stuff to make this thing happen, right? For a fighter that doesn't make the money John makes, that's very hard to do. So you get a guy like Yoel Romero, and he just wants to get out of the situation because you watch your reputation get ruined, all these other things. So there's things about this program that I've voiced to not only the UFC but to USADA themselves that need to be changed. And I honestly believe that now with the John Jones situation, you're right, there's going to be some look at this program to see how they can better do this to where it positively affects the fighters as opposed to negatively affect them. Because here's the thing, people could say what they want to say, right? If you get caught cheating, you get caught cheating. It is what it is. And I've always been a guy that said, like, if a guy is cheating, he's intentionally cheating, he should have the book thrown at him. Forget a year or 2 years, just throw the book at him, and that's fine. If you want to cheat, that's on you. That's a risk you take. But when you get a guy, and the thing is, people are like, well, just don't take supplements. You know, the thing is, this isn't a football player that practices for an hour and a half out on the field a day. Most of these guys are training four times a day, every single day of the week except Sunday. And some guys are going all the way through Sunday. So when you talk about, you go to a sparring session, then you go to a wrestling practice, then you go to strength and conditioning, and then you come back for kickboxing at night, and you're doing that every single day, or three sessions a day, every single day, your body needs food. Your body needs extra stuff. There's only so much you can eat. There's only so much you can really do. So for someone to say, well, just don't take supplements, I get it. For a lot of people, it's just the easy solution. And if you're able to do that, and your body still feels well, then you should do that. And I advise all my clients to do that. But in reality, right, this is a sport where supplements are going to be a part of it. So, you know what I mean? I wish that USADA would look at the companies more. I wish the government would take a look at some of these nutrition companies more, see where this product is coming from. A lot of the protein shakes that we take, us, just like you and I or whatever it is, some of this stuff is sold to us by American companies, but the product is made in China, just like, you know, almost everything that we get here in America now. So you never know what you're getting. And that's the sad thing about it, is that you can be taking a pill to supposedly, you know, lubricate your joints, like fish oil or something to help you lose weight, you know, in a natural way, and it ends up having all types of other byproducts. So, you know what I mean? And the crazy thing about it is that what Yoel took, in his case, right, the thing that he took was for him to help him reduce the swelling in his body, and it ended up, what he popped for, ends up doing the complete opposite. And they still gave him 6 months, and he missed the title shot and lost out on a payday and all that other stuff against Bisping, who I don't think anybody in the world would have ever picked Bisping over him. I think everyone knows that Yoel probably would have knocked him out and probably would have been the full-on, you know, champion instead of having his story written the way it ended up happening. So when you go to people and you tell them, hey, what's up with this and why this? Oh, you know, it's a deterrent. We wanted to make sure that the fighters understand. But your job is not to sit here and make examples out of guys who are not cheating. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's been cases in USADA's history where other athletes from other sports drank water. The water was contaminated. And they popped for something that's in the water. Or, you know what I mean, they eat the beef in Mexico, and that's, you know, clenbuterol. And then, you know, there's a massive thing. You go to Mexico, don't eat the beef there. So, I mean, you know, you just never know where something can come from. And it's a shame that people that are getting punished for these things, right, are being punished for these things. You follow what I'm coming
yeah,
from?
No,
you
I understand.
Get a guy who, you know, guy who passes all these drug tests, and then you have one test where, I mean, I don't know if you read the thing. You know, we all know what a kilogram is and a gram and a, you know what I mean? But was it a picogram or something like that? I never heard of that. You're talking about one-tenth of 1 millionth. They said it's like taking a pinch of salt and throwing it in an Olympic-sized swimming pool. That's how much of the stuff he had in the system. And then, oh, he's a cheater. And so I just, you know, that's the problem I have with it. It's that you put out all this information. There's no research into it. It's just immediate. For transparency's sake, we're just going to say this guy is suspended because, you know, until further notice, by then it's already done. Reputations are ruined. Everything is a disaster.
When this news came out, everyone under the sun said, oh, October 28th, perfect. November 3rd is MSG. Dana White has said multiple times he's not fighting on the MSG card. Could you tell us, is John Jones fighting on the MSG card?
No, he's not. Not as of right now. We're still working on some stuff.
You said not as of right now. Is there a chance he fights on it?
No, probably not. I mean, I don't want to get anybody's hopes up. Probably not. But, I mean, you know, we're working on different dates and different things. So, you know, we're hoping to see him as soon as possible. I mean, obviously, he wants to get back in there. We want him to get back in there, and I know he's excited to get back and fight. So,
is it possible December 8th pay-per-view, December 29th? Is it possible 2018?
Yeah. I would love to see it happen, but I can't tell you for sure right now. Like, we're still working through a lot of different things. Remember, he's been out for a year and change, and, you know, there's a lot of different things that happened. And before that, he fought, and he was out for a year and change before that. So, you know what I mean? There's some stuff we still got to work through and get to a happy medium from both sides. But, yeah, I mean, listen, we should hopefully the next couple of weeks get something, you know, resolved and get a date, you know, either at the end of this year or beginning of next year, something like that. So,
if you and John had your way, who's the first opponent?
I mean, listen, you know, at this point, I don't think John cares. I think John wants his light heavyweight belt back. So the person that has that is Daniel Cormier. And I think if you ask John, he would say, listen, whoever's holding that belt is the guy that I don't want to fight right away. I mean, listen, he beat DC twice already. You know what I mean? The second time was worse than the first time. So, you know, for him to get up to fight DC again, it has to be for the belt. If DC doesn't have it, then, you know, he's going to fight whoever is the next one in line to get to that belt or have that belt. And that's just, I think, what happens. So I would have to assume at this point it's either going to be Daniel Cormier or it could be potentially Alexander Gustafsson.
Yeah,
just all depends.
Gustafsson's coming up next. We know he wants that fight. Is there a chance? DC doesn't seem interested at the moment.
I think that you have to look at what happens with Cormier first and figure out what Cormier wants to do. Cormier made it clear the other day that he wasn't fighting him, that he has a fight with Brock, and you know he did what he did. You remember that whole interview he did about USADA and all that stuff. So I don't know how that's going to turn out. That's why I said there's a lot of moving parts. So just to throw out November 3rd, I don't think it's fair to anyone, including Cormier, to just be like, hey, you're going to now do this. And Cormier might be like, hey, I'm fighting Brock. So there's some things there that are working that we have to figure out still.
To the best of my knowledge, UFC still doesn't have a main event for UFC 230. You have a lot of clients. Are they banging on your door for people other than John Jones?
I mean, listen, my clients are banging on the door to try to get on that card and fight. So who knows? We'll see. Like in the next couple of days, I'll have a good clarity on if one of my clients will be on that card. It won't be John, but it could be someone else, so we'll see.
Well, it's not going to be Tyron, right? Because Tyron told me he's having surgery.
Then it might not be Tyron then. Then it might not have anybody. What do you want to tell you? Tyron was the only other one that could have possibly done it, so we'll see. I'm not ruling anything out because it just all depends on certain things. But, I mean, Tyron can do it. John can do it. You never know. But as of right now, I don't have anyone booked for a fight November 3rd.
Okay. Before I let you go, break some news right now. Anything. What do you have?
I don't have a thing, brother. I don't have a thing.
You've given us enough. You're kind enough. This is great stuff. Thank you, Malky. Thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it. And congratulations to you and John on getting this done.
I appreciate it. Thank you, brother.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. There he is, the one and only Malky Kawa stopping by. 15 months for John Jones. I say that's a victory. A lot of people didn't think that was going to happen. And a lot of people thought he'd return at MSG. Certainly the stars would seem to align. He says, as of right now, not happening. We shall see. All right. Before we get going to our next guest, and we just spoke about him. His name is Alexander Gustafsson. Let me tell you quickly about our good friends over at Indochino.
Indochino is the world's most exciting made-to-measure menswear company. I love that music. Great job by Jake. We make suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. Guys love the wide selection of high-quality fabrics and colors to choose from, and the option to personalize the details, including your lapel, lining, pockets, buttons, and writing your own monogram. Here's how it works. Visit a stylist at our showroom and have them take your measurements personally, or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric inside and out. Choose your design customizations. Submit your measurements with your choices. Relax while your suit gets professionally tailored. Mailed to you in a couple weeks. How about that? Now, this week, my listeners, listeners of this great program, and viewers, can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 USD. That's at Indochino.com. When you enter the code MMA at checkout, MMA, that's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. F-R-E-E, that's Indochino.com. Promo code MMA for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. Incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. How about it? Indochino are also expanding into casual clothing. Your made-to-measure chinos will quickly become your go-to pant. Pairing as easily with a suit jacket as they do with a sweater, and they'll be good any time of the year for any occasion, from boardroom meetings to Sunday brunches. Who doesn't love brunches? Indochinos. At an intro price of $79 USD for the casual wear. How about that? Indochino.com. Support them because they support us. Now, let us move along and say hello to our next guest. We just spoke about him. He is the one and only, the Mauler, Alexander Gustafsson. He joins us now on the phone. Alex, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it, as always. And congratulations on your second baby. How about that? Mazel tov.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
This is another boy?
Yeah, it's the first boy I had. The first one was a girl. So I got a girl and a boy now.
Wow, that's amazing. Now you got both. It's incredible. Any difference in the boy and the girl? Do you sense a difference in them?
They're so small, so young yet, and then he's just a week or 2 weeks old. So it's the same routine, same type of routines, and they just sleep, eat, and shit basically. So yes. It's kind of easy.
Are you changing diapers though, Alex? Tell us the truth.
I do.
You do, okay.
Not all the time, but sometimes.
well done, and congratulations to your family. I hope everyone is feeling as good as possible. By the way, I was just curious, and I was putting two and two together. We were hearing all the time that you wanted to fight on that August 4th card, but we never really knew why. Is this why? Like, did you want to get in before you guys had the baby? Was that why you were so eager to fight on that card?
No, not really, because I had a baby just recently. Now it's time for me to fight, basically. It's been too long, so I'm ready and I just want to fight. So that's basically it.
Okay, and how are you feeling? Because I know you had to pull out of that card. Your health at this time, how are you feeling?
Good.
You're ready to go?
I feel good. I'm training. Yeah, of course, 100%.
So you have been vocal on social media over the last few days. You have directed your comments towards John Jones. And what's interesting about it is we just celebrated the five-year anniversary of your incredible fight, in my opinion, the greatest fight in UFC history. There it is, John Jones versus Alexander Gustafsson at UFC 165.
Thank you.
Amazing. What a fight. I could watch it a million times. First off, are you surprised that he ended up getting 15 months, which is way, way smaller of a suspension than everyone expected? Were you surprised?
No, I haven't really thought about it. I don't put any energy in that at all. I just, he's back now, and I'm happy. I'm happy for him, and it's good for the division that he's back. So I just feel that I just want to welcome him back, basically.
So it would seem as though the stars are aligning for this matchup because you both don't have opponents. Everyone wants to see the fight again. Has the UFC approached you or your management about taking this fight?
No, not what I know, not really. It's just me shouting loud and want that fight. I feel that's the only fight that really makes sense right now. I've been away for a while. He's been away for a while. We both had a great first fight, and it just feels that. You know, it's a fight that the MMA fans around the world want to see, and I've seen him training. He's in shape, and I'm in shape, so let's do it. Why wait?
Are you surprised that they haven't reached out to you about it? Like I said, it seems like the perfect time to do the rematch.
Yeah. No, I don't know. Hopefully, they will give us a call in the day. I really hope so, and let's see what they say. You know, I'm pumped for that fight, I don't know what Joe Jones feels about it, but we had a good first one. Let's have a good second one.
Do you think because it was such a close fight that he may not be willing to do this again? I mean, there are still some people. I believe Chael even thinks it as well that you won that fight. Are you thinking that maybe that's why he's a little bit reluctant?
Well, I don't know. I just know that Johnny Seitz. He's not going to back for any fight, and he's the uncrowned champ. They took the belt from him, and he's never lost in his career, so he won't back down for any fight. And I just feel that he should take this fight basically, and let's do it.
So
I'm down for it. You know, let's fight in Madison Square Garden or whenever you want. I'm here.
So that was actually my next question. His manager, Malki Kawa, was just on the show and said that as of right now, John is not booked to fight at UFC 230 at Madison Square Garden on November 3rd. As of right now, they don't have a main event. And this seems, again, like the perfect main event for that card. And so you say that you would be willing.
Yes, it is.
You would be willing to fight on that card.
I'm willing. I'm down for it, 100%. Yeah, I'm down for it, 100%.
Something is weird here, Alex. I don't understand. It's like the start. He gets a suspension that is up October 28th. It's just so perfect. How do you not get this done? I mean, it's like a great fight. It's a rematch. It's a fight everyone wants to see of the best fight of all time. It just makes too much sense for Madison Square Garden, in my opinion. I'm shocked that they haven't even brought it to your attention.
I know. Hopefully they will give us a call in a couple of days. I hope so. So then let's see what they say. But like you say, it's a perfect fight, and I think the whole world wants to see that fight again. I've been in training. I'm feeling great. I'm in shape, and everything just feels really good right now. So I'm down for it.
Would a sticking point for you be 205? Or let's just say he says, you know, I haven't been, you know, in action for a while. I'm not going to be able to make 205. I'll fight you at a catchweight, 225, heavyweight, whatever the case is. Would you still take the fight?
Of course. I'm a big light heavyweight too. He's a big light heavyweight. I'm a big light heavyweight. That makes sense. 100%.
Do you feel like this fight has to be for a belt?
Well, I think it's a great fight, and it's too good not to be about the belt. I think he's the guy who never lost, and they took his belt away, and basically he doesn't want to fight. If we start there, this one doesn't want to fight. He's a heavyweight now, and he's up there. He's just aiming at Brock right now. Why not?
Would you be okay if it's an interim belt fight, or do you think it should be for the real title? Like, are you saying that they should strip DC and just make this for the real belt because John was once the real champion?
I think it should be about the real belt, of course, but. If you do it for the interim, let's do it. And, you know, whatever they say.
Okay.
I'm up for it. So, you know, I don't have a problem either of it, but it is a title quality fight, if I put it in that way. I think this is the fight people want to see. And I think the right way to put it is it should be about the belt, but I don't know how everything will play out. And whatever it goes, I'm here, and if it's for an interim belt, I'm fine with that too. So,
you've been critical of Jones in the past. Do you have any concern about him fighting this fight not clean? Do you think that he would cheat?
No, I don't think so. I don't really care. He can cheat if he wants to cheat. I don't care. I'll still put a beating on him. So it's all good for me. You know, whatever he wants to do, he does it, and it's all up to him. But I know what I have, and I know what I'll be. So I'll be ready.
Do you think he was cheating in the first fight against you?
You know, I can just speculate, and I don't want to speculate. So that's in the past. We had a good first round, and I just want a second one. It's a fight I wanted for a very long time, and also all the fans around the world. So, and I think John wants it too. He wants to make a statement. He wants to win there. He wants to beat me up just to a point. I'm just hoping he's up for it. So.
God, I would love to see that fight. That was such a great night in Toronto. It was magical, and I would do anything to see that fight again. It seems like such a no-brainer. When's the last time you watched it, Alex? Have you sat back and watched it recently?
No, not recently, but I've seen it a couple of times. I've seen it enough to know how every round looks like. So, but not for a long time. I haven't seen it. No.
And you still think you won, right?
I still think I had three rounds against him.
Yeah,
it was a tight fight. It was a hard fight. He finished very strong. He does that in all his fights. Whatever the fight plays out, he always makes sure to finish strong, and that's what judges see. And you know, John's a smart guy. He's a great fighter and intelligent fighter. So you can't let them have the edge of you in the end of rounds, basically.
Have you ever seen that interview that I did with him a couple of years ago where he said that he was partying that whole week in Toronto and he walked out to the cage saying to himself, I'm going to lose this fight. I didn't do enough to prepare for it. Did you ever see that? And if so, what did you make of it?
No, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, that's what he said. He said he was just kind of out of control that week and didn't prepare enough and sort of took you for granted and was doubting himself on the way to the cage. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it is crazy. I think that's just excuses, nothing else.
Oh, okay. So you're thinking that he's giving excuses for his performance because the fight was closer than most people expected.
Exactly.
So what's the message here to the UFC?
Yeah, I gave him an opportunity to prove a point in our next fight.
Yes. So what's the message here to the UFC? What's the message to John Jones? How do we make this happen? How do we get it done November 3rd, Madison Square Garden?
Let's do it. It's one of the biggest fights in the UFC history, and let's have another one. And it's a great matchup. Let's do it. Madison Square Garden. It's a most famous arena, and let's do it for the belt. Let's fight for the belt, and just have a great second fight that everyone wants to see.
All right, simple enough. I hope they make it happen. As of right this second, no main event. It makes all the sense in the world. Greatest fight ever. Let's do it again in the world's most famous arena and greatest arena. I mean, it's a no-brainer.
Exactly.
Jeez, Louise. Exactly. I think I need to get things done over there. I need to fly down to Vegas and make this happen for you, Alex. I'll do my best on this show.
I will appreciate that.
All right. I got your back. Alex, I appreciate you doing this as always. Again, congratulations to you and your family, and good luck getting this fight. I, for one, hope that it happens sooner rather than later. I hope it happens in this very city, New York City.
I appreciate that, my friend. Thank you.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. There he is, the Mahler himself, Alexander Gustafsson. No main event as of right now, UFC 230. They're doing promos for it during the Sao Paulo card, and they're sort of listing Nate Diaz versus Dustin Poirier as the last fight, but There's not a main event, and I see Dustin Poirier campaigning for a 165-pound title versus Nate Diaz. I would love that as the co-main. Why not? It's time to introduce that belt. It would be great. No, I don't mean main event, Jake. I mean 165-pound co-main, Nate Diaz versus Dustin Poirier, main event, the rematch of the greatest fight of all time, John Jones versus Alexander Gustafsson. Come on. It makes too much sense. Now we're talking. The last two MSG cards had Conor McGregor versus Eddie Alvarez, historic fight, and GSP versus Bisping, greatest night ever in the sport, those three title fights, back to back to back. We got to follow it up with something big. How about rematch of the best fight ever? Big. Let's go.
November 3rd, it's rapidly approaching. It's September 24th. I'm getting nervous. MSG deserves a big card, a big main event. Let's go. I'll tell you one fight that's not on that card. Yoel Romero versus Paulo Costa. Where did I hear that first? This nose. Who told you first? There it is. Okay. Before we move along to our next guest, let me tell you about our good friends over at Untuckit. And guess what? I actually just got an Untuckit shirt in the mail. Look at this. We are swimming in ads these days, my friends. Swimming. Look at that. That's me swimming. See that? Swimming. Anyway, everyone wants to be a part of the Helwani show, okay? And as you know, it's never a good look when you untuck a long, bulky dress shirt. Untuck it, I'm talking about. That's my cue for the music. All right. You may think it makes you look casual, but more than likely, it just ends up looking sloppy. There's the music. That's why Untuck It makes shirts specifically designed to be worn untucked. A casual shirt that's not too long and not too short, it's just right. Shirts designed so well, GQ calls them, quote, perfection, end quote. Untuckit shirts are a go-to for any occasion, from casual to dressy. And not only do they look good, they feel great. And if you're a woman wishing you can have one of these, well, Untuckit now makes shirts for women too. Shirts for her that are casual, versatile, and designed to last. Log on to untuckit.com and check out all the new arrivals. Use the promo code MMA for 20% off your entire purchase. You can also visit one of Untuckit's over 25 retail locations across the country. Stop hiding your shirt with your pants and your pants with your shirt. Untuckit.com, your solution to perfecting casual. Use promo code MMA for a 20% saving. Support them because they support us. Now let us move along to our next guest, the one and only Le Predateur. Francis Ngannou joins us from beautiful Paris, France. Francis, how are you?
I'm good, Aria. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for joining us. It's always great to talk to you. So we're off to China, November 24th, Curtis Blaydes rematch. Are you happy with this fight?
Yes, I do. I'm happy with it. And I know it's going to be a tough fight, but it's a good fight for me.
Is this a good fight for you because you already beat him, so you have the confidence that you're better than him, that you have the win over him? Is this the perfect fight for you at this stage of your career?
No, I think this is that would be a mistake to think that Curtis Blaydes has been improve his game all over and then keep winning, you know. So he gets, I'm sure that he's more confident now than ever. And then, you know, basically for the revenge. But, you know, I feel indifferent. I feel I'm going to go there and then, that's why I'm going to go there and then give it all, you know. And I decided to make my training camp in Paris so I can go back to my route. That's what they say, Yes.
Okay, so you're doing your training camp in Paris. Are you doing it with your longtime coach, Fernand Lopez?
Yes, I'll do with it. Okay. With him.
So no more Las Vegas for you?
No. I mean, it's just occasional, it's just casual, so just for this fight, and then we'll see how things go.
Why did you decide to go back to Paris for this training camp?
I decided to step back a little bit, and then to make myself again, you know, try to feel all that thing that I had in Paris, try to make it back, and then because I really need it for this fight.
Okay, and did you feel that after the Derek Lewis performance you needed to be in a comfortable situation to get your confidence back to be around familiar faces?
Even before the Derek Lewis fight, I thought about it. I thought about came here for my next training camp. So it's not going to anticipate.
So I think some people will be surprised to hear this news because your coach, your longtime coach, Felnan Lopez, told MMA Note recently, quote, "I had a conversation with Ngannou and I said to him, you have changed, my friend. You have changed. You're not the same anymore. Your ego is killing you and it's just about your ego." And he agreed with some of the comments that Dana White said about you recently. Were you surprised to hear him say that? And have you addressed these comments with Felnan?
Yes. And then I heard about that and I really get surprised of it. I mean, basically at that moment, you know, when you're winning the fight, you're the good guy, the best ever. And then when you start lost, when you get lost, everyone, people around stumble a little bit, you know. They don't stay straight up. But however, I talk with Fernand. I'm like, what exactly happened? What was that? Is it because I bet even some fighter has issues with their coach or their team or something like that, but it's not on media, you know.
Yeah.
And yes, I'm like, so it's something that you can really talk to me, but you saw that the media is the way to fix it. I mean, I don't know. But I think he stumbled too.
How so?
He stumbled. I lost the fight. And it's about me. So everyone want to take a step out of the losses. I guess so.
But were you, I mean, you've been with him for a long time. Were you hurt that he went to the media and said this about you without, you know, first coming to you and telling this to your face?
We get something, but I mean, like, this kind, the way that he's talk on media, he spoke on media, I mean, he was exaggerated.
Oh, okay. You think
he shouldn't say this kind of thing. I mean, even there are no reason to some coach to say that to someone, his fighter. I mean, obviously, yes, I have changed. I moved to Las Vegas. I have changed. I'm not in Paris anymore. I changed. But even I moved to Las Vegas, I still try to be, you know, think about them, make them try to stay together. That the only mistake that I did, you know, that my only mistake.
And was there a chance that these comments could have ruined your relationship? Like, did you guys have to sit down and clear the air, or were you always going to come back to him?
Say it again, please.
Initially, was there a chance that his comments about you and your ego and how you've changed, was there a chance that these comments could have ruined your relationship, or were you always planning on going back to Paris to train with him for this fight?
Since what he said on media, we have spoke 3 times.
Okay.
About it. Even today, we spend more than an hour talk about it, and then also with some friend around, try to fix things, try to say, hey, guys, we are a team. We have to do like this. We still take a chance to stay together. You know, it's not because things is not going well that we have to screwed up everything, you know. So we came on it. I'm going to do my training camp with him.
Did he apologize to you?
Yes. He did. He apologized to something, and then he said something hurt him that he can apologize on it, but first of all, shouldn't say that on media. And then, because that is not something that they take it out to the media, you know, just doesn't make sense. He heard me sometimes that I will not go to media like, okay, we mess. No, it's a team. People out there are not supposed to know what's wrong inside.
Right.
They can know when thing is going well, but when it mess up, screwed up, they're not supposed to know. You know?
Did you feel...
Every house has its own problem, has its own issues, its own argument. But they're arguing inside, behind the door, you know? You know, outside the door. And then basically, the most thing was because, you know, this was to confirm what Dana White said. We really, he don't need to support Dana White saying something.
So have you talked to Dana White since his comments about you? And he has said them again in another interview. Did you clear the air with him?
No, I haven't seen. I haven't talked with him.
Do you want to clear the air with him?
How do I gonna start that? I mean, I think when someone, yes, I want to, but I don't know how I gonna handle that, you know. So it's just about media. I just heard about on media since my fight against Tipe. I haven't seen Dana White, so honestly, I don't know how to handle that.
Did you think about calling him and just clearing the air?
I never called him. We never spoke on phone.
Okay. Are you past all of this? Do you feel like you could focus on the fight, or is it still bothering you, the comments?
I have to take that out of my head, you know. I know, as I said before, this just people get disappointed of my performance, and then I just have to put that away, make attraction of that one, of that, and then try to focus on the fight. And then as soon as I get back the performance, I think all this will be forgotten.
Do you feel as though your confidence is coming back, or you'll only really know for sure come November 24th?
My confidence is coming back. I mean, the last fight was most about game plan and everything, you know, like we get scared. Basically, I get scared of time, so it was like, okay, you have time. And then I was just in my head, I was like, I have time. So even when the referee stopped the fight at the third round, I was like lost, like, okay, what's going on? The fight is over or what? Because I knew that I had time, but, you know, my confidence is... He's getting back. He has to. The way that I am now, I better get back with that confidence and shut some people mouth.
Will you be working with John Wood? Will he be in your corner for this fight?
No, since when I'm not in Vegas, no.
Okay. And I wanted to ask you, Francis, because we didn't talk about this the last time. Were you offended seconds after your fight, maybe more minutes, I should say, Brock Lesnar was in the cage insulting you after the Stipe fight as well? He said a bad word about you. Were you bothered by that? Did you feel like that crossed the line?
No, I don't think. I just think he's just a dumb guy. Because since when I had called him out, and then he shut up, and then just after the loss, he tried to come to the Octagon and talk shit. but let's step back in the octagon. That's it. You know, action talks more than your mouth.
Right. But you weren't really bothered by it.
No. I didn't give a shit of it. Honestly, about Brock Lesnar, I don't give a shit of what he said.
Do you think it's?
I get bothered by what Dana White say, and then after with my coach, with Fennel, that was the two things that I get bothered with.
Do you think it's crazy that he's getting a title shot?
He's crazy. You know, he just came for suspension, all those things, and just come for the title shot. Yes, I think it's crazy. But who am I? Business.
Right. So next up, it's November 24th in China. Have you ever been to China? Do you have any problem with fighting there?
No, I never been in China. I should go there for the press conference, and then, man, I went to the Chinese embassy in Los Angeles. They are not easy for visa, man.
Yeah.
We try anyhow. They get us late. So I didn't go to China.
Okay.
I was like, are you serious? Yes.
But will you have a problem with going to the fight?
No.
Okay.
It was just a matter of time because it was 1 week before the flight.
Okay. And how far out will you go before November 24th?
2 weeks.
Okay.
I think 2 weeks is good. It's good. Because I'm in Paris, and in Paris I have advantage than in Vegas, because China has 15 hours ahead of Las Vegas, but just 6 hours ahead of Paris.
Right. All right. Well, I wish you the best, Francis. I'm looking forward to the fight. I'm looking forward to the old Francis coming back with renewed confidence. And firing on all cylinders. I appreciate you coming on as always, Francis. Je te souhaite une bonne chance dans le training
merci,
camp
Harry.
Et dans le match. C'est toujours un plaisir de te parler.
Plaisir partagé.
Merci, mon ami.
Merci, Ariel.
OK, au revoir. Bon courage.
Merci.
There he is, the one and only Francis Ngannou. He headlines the UFC's return to China on November 24th against Curtis Blaydes. They fought several years ago. This one taking place, by the way, at the Cadillac Arena in Beijing. And it's the UFC's first event in Beijing. And it is also a rematch, as I said, of a fight that happened in April of 2016, a fight that Francis won via TKO in the second round, end of the second round, doctor stoppage. And it's a big deal for the UFC to be heading off to Beijing. So technically November 25th in Beijing, November 24th, I do believe, here in the United States. Great stuff there from Francis Ngannou. Got a little bit fired up talking about Brock Lesnar. Now, let us move along and focus on this weekend, because in my opinion, it's the greatest main event in the history of Bellator. Almost 10 years they've been around. They've never put on a fight quite like this one. Gegard Mousasi versus Rory McDonald, champion versus champion, the middleweight champion versus the welterweight champion for the middleweight title. That's the main event. Also on the card, Quinton Jackson versus Wanderlei Silva IV, Andre Koreshkov against Douglas Lima, first fight in the welterweight Grand Prix. Leandro Higo versus Aaron Pico. Holy smokes. Also, Carrie Melendez, the wife of one Gilbert Melendez, on the card. But nothing bigger than Gegard versus Rory. Pleasure, as always, to be joined by Rory McDonald. He's on the phone right now, standing by. Hey, Rory, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. I can't wait for this fight, man. Holy smokes. I think it's one of my most anticipated fights of the year. It is just so amazing. I think it's the biggest in Bellator's history. And, of course, it's your middleweight debut. Now that it's almost done, training camp is essentially done, what's the difference training for a middleweight fight as opposed to a welterweight fight for you?
Everything's the same except I get to eat a lot more food, which has been a pleasure.
a massive
difference, right, in that regard?
Yeah. Like, not many people realize it, but when you're cutting weight and stuff, the food prep and organization that takes place is it sucks a lot of energy out of you, and it's very time consuming, especially preparing for the week of the fight. So it's been really nice to just not have to worry about that.
Did you do any like diet stuff? I mean, obviously I doubt you're eating like, you know, McDonald's and stuff, but do you have to watch anything that you eat?
I'm just, you know, I'm eating clean, but I get to have carbs, and, you know, I'm trying, obviously I'm eating healthy, but, you know, I don't have to eat to lose weight.
Could I ask on this Monday afternoon how much you currently weigh?
190 pounds.
Wow, this is going to be amazing for you, right?
Yeah, breathe.
When do you fly out to San Jose?
Tomorrow morning.
How much do you expect to be by the time you land in San Jose?
Same thing.
Same thing, okay. Now, so essentially you have to cut 5 pounds. Is it possible that this will be such an enjoyable experience that you'll never want to return to 170?
I have to return to 170. I have a tournament ahead of me, so I have no choice.
But in your mind, like, has this opened your eyes to fighting at middleweight and maybe being a better fighter at middleweight?
I don't know. I guess we'll see how the results go. But I've enjoyed it so far.
Right. More than you thought?
No, about as much as I thought I would. I mean, training camp's still hard. It's just, you know, it's just easier not have to worry about the diet, you know. It's just one less thing.
How much do you expect to weigh on Saturday night?
190 pounds.
Wow. And what do you think he'll weigh?
200 or more, probably.
Does that concern you at all?
Not really.
I mean, at that point, it's pretty minimal, right?
I mean, it's going to be what it's going to be. He's going to be bigger than me. I mean, that's what I signed up for. It's not going to be a surprise to me. He's going to be a bit bigger. He's going to be probably stronger, at least in the early rounds. But, I mean, I feel like I have what it takes to mitigate that and just, you know, go ahead and shut him down.
You know, you've been a part of big fights before. You just recently fought for the belt. You've had big fights in the UFC, of course, in the past. But I'm wondering, and I say this in the most, you know, respectful and endearing way possible, you're crazy. And I feel like these kinds of challenges get you up in the morning, give you a little bit of a pep in your step. Is that accurate? Like, the fact that this is such a big jump for you and you're fighting the champion at 185, a legend like Gegard, do you find yourself a little more motivated in this camp?
Well, not really. I mean, I'm pretty motivated since I got to Bellator. And I, you know, I made the changes in my life and in my training and my fighting style back to, you know, how I wanted things. So it's just carried through to this fight. Obviously, this is the biggest one so far in my career. But nothing's changed as far as my motivation. I'm driven. This is what I set out for to do in this sport, and it's here. All thanks to God. He blessed me with these opportunities, and I'm just really happy that it's all happening.
Do you consider this a bigger fight than your UFC title fight?
Yeah. I'm going to be a two-weight class world champion. That's very rare in our sport. Obviously, not as much as of late, but it's still rare.
Right.
I'm happy to be fighting a guy like Gegard for the title too, because I think he is, if not the best middleweight, regardless of promotion. So, very exciting stuff. Happy.
Yeah, that's what I love so much about this fight. You two are the first champions, I think, in Bellator history where they have a very strong case of saying our champions are better than yours. We have the best in the world in these respective weight classes. And oh, by the way, you guys are actually fighting each other. And Gegard is on a roll as of late. I believe he's won his last 7 in a row. And, of course, he's the middleweight champion. Do you have a theory as to why he has been as good as of late? You know, he used to have a, you know, he had a bit of a stretch there where he was, like, you know, winning a few, then losing, winning a few. But lately he has just
really put it all together. Do you have a theory as to why?
No, I didn't really look into it that much. I just kind of focused on myself. Everybody goes through these ups and downs in professional fighting. That's the sport, you know, so it's to be expected.
Does that mean you didn't watch any footage of him?
No, I've seen his fights.
What impresses you most about him?
I think obviously it stands out that he's relaxed right off the bat. Like, the guy looks like he's at, like, a boring Christmas dinner or something when he walks into the cage.
Yes.
But he's, I don't know, he's very skilled, and he applies his technique very well, regardless of being in a stressful situation.
Was that some Rory McDonald trash talk about Gegard Mousasi? I think it might have been.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I'm not sure how much of a diss that is. I think he kind of understands that he has that look to him, too.
The best is when he goes into the fight, he has, like, bedhead. It always looks like they just, like, pulled him out of bed. You ever notice that? It's incredible.
I didn't notice it, but... Yeah,
you'll get a good look, obviously, on Saturday. And what's interesting about your scenario, as you just mentioned, is you have this fight, but you're also a part of the tournament, and you're scheduled to fight John Fitch. Have they even talked to you about when they hope that fight is supposed to happen, that first-round fight?
I think they're looking at January, February.
Okay. And just for clarification, every time you fight in that tournament, is it a title fight, or is your belt no longer on the line?
Yeah, every fight will be a title fight.
Okay. Who do you consider to be the biggest threat in that tournament?
Everybody's good. I think the up-and-coming guys are dangerous, because I think Ed Ruth and Michael Venom Page are undefeated, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
That's always interesting. So I'm excited about those guys being a part of it. Neiman Gracie as well. So we get some, like, you know, more like of the guys on their way up that aren't tested at the top yet. That's always nice to have them a part of it. And obviously Korshkov and Lima is going to be a crazy fight. So, I mean, I don't know. I think tournaments are crazy. Sometimes it's not always about being the best. Sometimes it's also about having the most stamina, the most endurance, the will to win, the heart to push through tough times. And so I guess we'll see.
Do you like that they put you in the tournament, or do you think that you should have been the pot at the end of the rainbow?
No, I would have been upset about that. I'm very happy to be a part of the tournament. I want to work my way through all the toughest guys in the division, so I could say that I was a part of it too.
It feels, at least to me, like this might be the first time that you're starting to feel like, okay, I've got a full plate on my schedule. I've got a fight after another fight. I've got a tournament. This is it accurate? Like, this is kind of why you came to Bellator, so that you could be more active?
Yeah, I'm very happy that everything came together. It's going to be a busy year, and that's everything I hoped for. It's not just busy, but exciting. I'm in a tournament. I'm fighting for another weight class world title against another one of the best. This is very exciting stuff. Opportunities I wouldn't have got if I stayed in the situation I was in. So, just feeling very blessed with the direction God took my life, and just very happy.
Do you think it's a major blunder on Bellator's part to not put the highest paid fighter in the company, Dylan Danis, in the tournament?
I'm not too sure what their decision was there. Maybe they offered it to him. I don't know. I'm sure it would have been a pleasure to have him a part of it as well.
Yeah, I'm sure it would have been. And if you win the fight, all goes well on Saturday, do you foresee a scenario where you may be a part of the tournament with Fitch, then go back to 85 and defend the belt while the tournament plays out, and then go back to 170? Or would you wait till after the entire tournament is over in an ideal situation and then defend the 185 title?
It's so hard to say.
Yeah.
It's really hard to say how the scheduling is going to work out, because it's not like we have set dates on when these tournament fights are taking place.
Right.
We're just kind of, it's like going with the flow. So I feel like I'm just going to have to be ready all year. And also, you know, the middleweight division has to, we have to see how that works out too. Rafael Lovato just won his fight. I think Machida's fighting Carvalho.
Yeah.
In Hawaii there. So I think we got to see what happens, see what contenders are there and if they're ready to fight. I'm going to keep an open mind and see how the landscape works out.
But to be clear, you do want to fight at 185 if all goes well, right? You're not just going to hold on to that belt and vacate it or something like that.
No. I mean, if I won that belt against Musashi, my goal would to be to defend it, and you know, be active between the weight classes. But if I won the welterweight tournament, maybe I would give up the welterweight belt and focus on middleweight. Who knows? I mean, I really don't know.
Okay.
We'll see.
Are you getting?
Go ahead. No.
Are you getting a lot of questions about what DAZN is, how to watch the fight, where to get DAZN? Do you get that a lot?
A little bit. So everyone always assumes it's going to be on Paramount again, but it's not. It's going to be on the DAZN streaming app. For anyone that doesn't know, it's kind of like Netflix. You download it on whatever device you have, a smart TV, laptop, you know, tablet, iPhone, whatever. And you subscribe to it, and basically you can watch live sports, and also you can go back and watch events in the past. So it's pretty cool.
By the way, that was a great plug. We'd even set that up beforehand, but you did a great job there. Bellator is going to be really pleased, I think.
I'll
just add that I watched the Anthony Joshua Alexander Povetkin fight on DAZN this past weekend, and I thought it was great. Very easy to use. So that's, as Rory just said, that's where you can watch the fight this weekend. The biggest card, the biggest main event in Bellator history. It's going to be phenomenal. By the way, where did you do the majority of this, or maybe the entire training camp for this fight? Did you do it in Montreal, or did you spend some time in British Columbia as well?
I did the whole thing in Montreal this time. It was just easier on me with everything me and my family had going on here this summer. And, it was just easier on us.
And did Carlos Condit ever make his way over there?
No. I think he was working on his passport. And the weekend, it didn't work out this time, but maybe in the future.
Okay. Well, I wish you the best, Rory. I can't wait for this. I am so excited about this fight. It's going to be amazing, and what an opportunity for you. This Saturday, San Jose, the mecca of fighting as far as the West Coast is concerned, in my opinion, the SAP Center. It's Gegard Mousasi versus Rory McDonald for the middleweight title. Thanks for squeezing us in, Rory. I really appreciate it. Best of luck to you in the fight.
All right, thank you very much. Take care.
All right, there he is, the one and only Rory McDonald stopping by. What an opportunity. And what a venue that is for this fight. Of course, Scott Coker for many years holding many big fight cards in that arena, the Shark Tank, if you will. Strikeforce was born there, and now he brings this card back to San Jose, the Bay Area, I should say. Rampage Jackson versus Vanderlei Silva for the beginning of the welterweight tournament. And yes, the entire card airing on DAZN. That's DAZN. Personally, I think it should be pronounced DAZN, but it's DAZN. And you can download it on your phone. You can download it on your TV. And I watched it this weekend. Anthony Joshua versus Alexander Povetkin. What a performance from Anthony Joshua. And that's where you can watch this fight. We'll talk about that a little more on the post show with New York Rick. And you may have heard that already if you like to eat your pizza crust first, if you get what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying? Anyhow, let us move along to our next guest. Some heartbreaking news late last week that shocked all of us in the MMA community. Glenn Robinson, the founder of the Black Zillions, who made a big splash when he came into the MMA world, representing the likes of Rashad Evans, Anthony Johnson, Tyrone Spong, Eddie Alvarez, and many more, sadly passed away due to a heart attack. He was just 50 years young.
His funeral was yesterday, as I said at the top of the show. Always so great to work with, so great to the media, always very accessible, and changed a lot of fighters' lives. So now I wanted to talk to Rashad about Glenn's legacy and what he did for a lot of MMA fighters and how much he meant to all of them. Rashad is kind enough to be joining us on the phone right now. Rashad, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem, man. No problem at all, man. It's just, you know, it's just so difficult when, you know, something like this happens. But, you know, this fate, you know, we all have to die sometime. And it never, you know, knowing that, but it never gets easy to deal with it when you're dealing with a death with somebody that's close to you, you know?
We had heard that he passed away from a heart attack. Is that accurate?
Yes. It was from a heart attack. It was on Wednesday morning. Wednesday morning he passed.
Was he struggling with his health, or was this completely out of the blue?
Yeah, he had some heart issues, but not heart issues. He had other health issues, but the heart, the shortness of breath, it started about 2 weeks ago, and he went for checkups to try to see, you know, if it was, you know, something wrong, and he was you know, going to doctors and getting some tests, but they weren't coming back with anything conclusive. So he was still steady in the testing process. You know, actually the day after he died was the day he was actually supposed to go and get some more treatment to see exactly what is going on with the shortness of breath.
When was the last time you spoke to him?
You know, I seen him at Tyrone's fight 2 weeks ago, but him and I really didn't speak. You know, him and I really weren't you know, speaking regularly. You know, you know, like brothers, man, we have situations where we would be cool for a while, then we'll have arguments, and, you know, then we'll make up, and then we'll be cool again. But sometimes, you know, life would just get busy and we weren't really speaking too much. But, you know, the love was never lost. You know, the thing with the whole team and how it split apart and fractured and all the drama that dealt with it, I think that contributed a lot to just the overall stress and overall the hardships that he was experiencing on the health level the last few years of his life. Because, you know, after things started to deteriorate with the team, you know, his health was deteriorating too, and, you know, they kind of mirrored each other, you know, and he just couldn't get a handle on his health situation.
I was going to say that I spoke to him a little bit as the team was somewhat dissolving and some of the fighters were leaving the team and he was no longer representing them. And it seemed to me like this was heartbreaking for him, that he poured a lot into the sport and a lot into the team. Do you feel like that contributed to his poor health?
Yeah, you know, just because, you know, he was very upset about it. And, I think it definitely had its factor, but, you know, also, you know, not for nothing, you know, lifestyle too, you know, not to say anything bad about him, but he didn't take the best care of himself. You know, he was always so busy trying to, you know, put out fires or trying to do something that he just really was always just focused on this task of just creating. You know, that's what he always was into, you know, making tools and trying to find a way to make projects work. So that's what he put in front of doing the things that he should have done to make sure that he was living a healthy life.
You met him I don't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, go on.
I was just going to say, you met him at an interesting point in your life, because that's when you were leaving Jackson's and there was all that drama with John Jones and the coaching staff over there. How did you meet him, and how did he get you to move to Florida and be sort of the captain and the face of this team?
Yeah, so I met him through a manager that I had of mine named John Rubenstein. John Rubenstein was a manager that I had that I used for acting, and he was working at the time. John Rubenstein was working with Glenn Robinson with somebody else with another project, and he thought it'd be Robinson thought it'd be a good idea if me and Glenn got together and met, and we did, and, you know, we had that synergy, and, you know, it felt like a natural fit, you know, and you know, Glenn and I were close right away from day one, and just the heart that Glenn had, you know, that's the thing that hurt me about anything, because here's the reality of the situation. Like, you know, the impact that he had and what he did for a lot of people, it goes unnoticed just because of the way of how it ended. You know, Glenn, he took care of a lot of people. You know, a lot of fighters on the team, he would take care of these guys, and he did it for the purest intentions. It wasn't like he's ever like, okay, I'm gonna lend you $5,000, but I want $7,000 back. It was never anything like that. A lot of times, Glenn would pay fighters their rent. You know, give them money to live. He would literally come from his own pocket to take care of these guys. And when he wasn't able to do that, he didn't say, hey, I can't do it anymore. Pride took over, and pride didn't allow him to say what he can and can't do. He enjoyed doing that. He enjoyed helping people out. So when he wasn't able to do that anymore, you know, he didn't adjust his promises, because he still believed and still wanted to help people out. And then that's where people were like, wait a minute, he's screwing me. He's not, you know, and that's when people started to pull away. And also when he got sick, he didn't communicate or didn't want people to know how sick he was. So he wouldn't speak to people when he got sick. Mm. And people took that as like, okay, he's pulling away from me. So it just kind of separated the whole team. And it was a big, just, it was communication broke down. Okay. And that's what caused everything to kind of fall apart. You know, and watching him, you know, laid to rest yesterday, and just, you know, feeling that emotion, feeling, and watching all, you know, my other teammates, you know, that was there. They got it. They understood. They felt, and we were all thankful for no matter how the situation ended with us all, you know, disbanding it and going our separate ways or whatever the case may be. We all understand that we were all brought in this position, and we were all brought together because of him. You know, rather it was, you know, with all the best promises being kept or not, we're here because of him, and he did a lot to help people out. And that's what I was sitting there at his funeral just thinking. I'm like, man, we're all here because of him. And, you know, him and I had our problems, but at the end of the day, I wouldn't trade anything, because I enjoy my life now, you know?
How was the funeral?
It was difficult. It was difficult just because there was that uncertainty in the air, you know, because you had, you had the fighters there, and then you had his family there. And you know, there's a bit of like, you know, because the family and everybody was really close to Glenn before he got involved with fight life. They look at him spending all his personal money and diving deep into this business venture. And, you know, it looks crazy. You know, you look like he's losing his mind. And for a while, they thought he was losing his mind, but they kept supporting him. And when things went to hell, you know, it left a sour taste in their mouth, because they felt as if like, well, you know, he wasn't able to do everything he said he was able to do for you guys, but doesn't what he did mean anything to you at all? Like, what he has been able to come through and do, you know, if you ask him to help you out 100 times, but he helps you out, you know, 70, does the 70 times you count mean anything? Or is it the 30 times that he didn't do anything for you that you're saying, oh, he's not whatever, you know? So I can understand that. So that kind of made it like at the funeral, like you didn't know how the energy was going to be. But then once everyone started to just grieve together, then it was, you know, that energy just wasn't there.
Okay. Well, that is good to hear. Yeah, no, that makes
sense. Yeah, it was good, man. It was good, man. It's just, you know what, Ariel? It's just so hard because, you know, Glenn came into this game and, you know, he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way with some of the things that he did coming on scene. But he accomplished a lot. You know, he accomplished a lot, and he put our team in a position where, you know, it takes teams a long time to build up to that level. You know, we had a killer team, and we had some of the best times of our life, and he was a part of that, you know?
Do you have a favorite memory with him, something that you shared with him, a moment backstage at the gym, before a fight, after a fight? Is there any moment, memory that you can share with us of you know, when things were just going great with you and the team and him in Florida once you moved there?
You know, what I would like that we would do, that and that's something that I'm going to miss, you know, we would always, we weren't just saying that we were like family. We really were like family. Like, our days consisted of, you know, we were always all together almost every single, you know, a lot of things that we did. So he would have like these fight parties, and they were just epic. You know, they you never knew what was going to happen, you know, but it was just, you know, cause outside the fight, we just, you know, we would just have a good time, you know, and we would do these, you know, like these staycations where we'd be like, all right, we're going to go to, Miami for the weekend, and we're just going to have a great time and go and have some fun and go clubbing, and then we'll bring our girls and we just have a great time. But that's the Glenn that I'm going to remember, you know, and that's the guy that I'm going to remember, because when, you know, you know a lot about people when they have something in life, because when people have something, a good mark of their character is how much they want to reach back and help other people, you know. But when people have stuff and they just want to hoard it to themselves and not want to help other people, you know, then that's the kind of person I'm not really into. But Glenn was the kind of guy who had a lot, and he shared it. He shared what he had. You know, he's changed. When I say he's changed people's life, he's changed people's life. You know, the Michael Johnsons, the Anthony Johnsons, you know, myself, Tyrone, like, you know, even Eddie Alvarez, you know, they didn't have the best, you know, ending of their relationship. But at the end of the day, like he did, you know, help Eddie, you know, get out of his situation too. And, you know, it may have not ended the way Eddie, wanted it to, and a lot of guys that want to, but, you know, the effort, the trying, to me, that matters a lot.
I'm happy you said that about family, because I would actually, I remember speaking to him, would speak to him a lot, and he would refer to guys like you and Anthony and Tyrone as his sons. And I always found that to be interesting, yeah. But he would actually say that when talking about you guys and how proud he was of you about what you were doing. I remember when Jordan Parsons passed away, how devastated he was. And talking, I spoke to him recently, not that long ago, about Tywan Claxton and how excited he was about him. So, he was just really proud of all of you, even, you know, off the record, behind the scenes. And, it was just shocking to hear of his passing. I appreciate you coming on, Rashad, and talking about him
a little bit.
And I hope that people remember all the things he did in the sport.
Yeah, no problem, man. I appreciate you having me on, man. You know, Glenn is a great guy, and you know, I don't know. You know, maybe some people say other things different, but the people who really knew Glenn knew where his heart was at. You know, and no one walks in this life mistake free without making mistakes, because it is the reason why we live. We live to make mistakes. We live to learn the lessons that mistakes brings, and to come back and be better. A better person. That's what life is about. And I don't think that he should be looked at differently, you know, because he made some mistakes in his life at one point. You know, he was a great man, and even though the team didn't work out the way that he wanted it to, you know, I'm forever a Black Zillion, and I'm forever proud to call him a friend of mine.
Thanks for doing this, Rashad. Hang in there. And again,
thank you.
My condolences to you and the team. On his passing.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. There he is. Rashad Evans, remembering Glenn Robinson, who passed away late last week due to a heart attack. Wish the best to his family as well. His daughter actually would do a lot of interviews, post them on YouTube. He was very proud of her as well. He'd show me clips of what she was doing, and was always glowing when speaking about her. So wanted to wish our condolences to his family as well. All right, we shall move along now and say hello to our next guest. And before we say hello to our next guest, I want to play you a quick clip that has gone viral across the world, not just in Ireland, but across the world.
Truth be told, my wife and I have watched this clip a million times. I hope he doesn't mind that I say this. It is incredible. It is vintage Tony McGregor, who I've had on the show before, a one-of-a-kind character, the father of the notorious Conor McGregor. Of course, he's probably very excited for October 6th. But a few weeks back, he made headlines. He went viral when he posted this clip on social media about the DART system over in Ireland. Let's play the clip and say hello to
Tony. Okay, everybody. Good evening. I just let you know about my travel experience on the DART this afternoon. That's the rail system that Dublin City operate. It's called the Dublin Area Rapid Transport, something like that, DART. That's what it stands for. Anyway, I was none too plussed with my experience on the DART. When I got to Lansdowne Road Station, I tendered a brand new crisp 20 euro note into the automatic machine looking for a single ticket to Dunleary. They had the bloody cheek to give me back, and I'm going to show you this coinage. 20 euros, 17.30, and a miserable little one-way ticket. They gave me all that coinage. I have no room to put those coins anywhere. I wear a slim fit, hand fitted Hugo Boss suit.
And in vintage McGregor fashion, he turned that clip into a sponsorship deal. The one and only Tony McGregor joins us right now. Mr. McGregor, how are you?
Good evening, Mr. Halwani. Yes, I'm very well. Thanks very much. I had good fun with that, Ariel, to be honest with you. I had a good fun day, and it just, you know, there was a bit of humour. And on the back of that, I was appointed a brand ambassador for a soft mineral drink, Luke Said Zero. So really and truly, just, I'm just having great fun with it, you know. I'm Mr. Ambassador now, by the way.
Mr. Ambassador Tony McGregor, so you were handing out free rides on the DART system on Friday in association with Lucozade Zero. You're their ambassador for the day. Does that blow your mind that your little video over there captivated so many people that it led to that?
Yeah, no, I had good fun. I mean, the whole thing was orchestrated very well. You know, the whole campaign was fabulous. I had an input into the campaign as well. I mean, the red suit was my idea, so the Lucozade people were just blown away by them, and I brought an energy and happiness on the day. And you know, to weary commuters, it was a cold, wet day. You know, so we were there cheering them up with free travel cards and free cans of the Lucozade Zero drink. So you know, we had good fun on the day.
And have you heard
happiness on a dreary Friday morning for the commuters of Dublin?
Oh, yes, it's wonderful. What a brilliant idea on their part. Have you heard from the DART about trying to fix this issue?
I met some of the big wigs of DART and Irish Rail System. They're very nice people. I had good fun with them as well. And, you know, they're all there doing the job as well. So, you know, I had good fun on the day. Yeah.
Now, when you filmed this video, Tony, did you think that it would turn, like, were you trying to make a stink? Or were you just trying, like, explain to us what's going through your mind as you sit down and you sort of vent on social media about all this? What led you to do it?
Like, okay, what happened was, I was just chronicling my day, that particular day. I had people to see, things to do, and I had a dart to catch. So, at the end of the day, I just surmised what happened during the day and just get my feelings towards the event on the day. So, you know, I posted it online, I posted it on my Instagram, I got some good responses from it. I got some negative responses from it as well. And, you know, the Lucozade Zero people picked up on it and they thought they could run a sort of advertising campaign. They nominated me, they appointed me as their brand ambassador. So, I mean, it just took legs and grew on its own, you know?
I have to say,
but the whole thing was fun, anyway. The whole thing was fun. The whole thing was fun. It was a fun day.
Oh, I can imagine. You are one of my favorite follows on Instagram, Tony, because, I mean, the life that you lead, it's like the reincarnation of James Bond. You're yachting, you're going out, you're doing things like this.
What is the
typical day like for you?
I just slotted into the yacht life anyway, Ariel. I'm really enjoying it. I've had a great season, a really adventurous season on the yacht this year. I was actually out on it yesterday in Dublin Bay. It was pretty blustery out there, but I still got 2 hours out in Dublin Bay, choppy seas, big swells. 2 hours was enough in those conditions, so I took it back into the harbour and moored her up for the night, and I'll go out this week. Actually, our weather is supposed to be good this week, so maybe mid to late week I'll go out again for an hour or two.
But it's important to keep the engine ticking over as well on these yachts, you know?
Sure.
It's a motor yacht.
Do you ever have a father-son moment with Connor and just the two of you go out there on the seas together to bond a little bit?
Yeah, we've done that several times over the season, yeah. He goes out with jet skis. I've taken the yachts out, and we've had good fun. Yeah, he gets in for a dip into the cold Irish Dublin Bay. We've had good fun. We've been out, we've had family days, we've had the grandchildren. So, yeah, we've all had good family fun all the season. We celebrated Taylor's 18th birthday. That's my granddaughter. We had a party on the yacht for her. So we had a great evening that evening. So we're using it to the fullest, taking good advantage of it.
And by the way, I would be remiss if I didn't congratulate you and the family. I understand Dee is expecting once again, so that's very exciting. What number of grandchild would this be for you and your wife?
1, 2, 3, 4th, our fourth grandchild.
Wow, how about that?
Yeah, so we're looking forward to this. This is going to be it's going to be early 2019. So we're actually looking forward to going over now. Dee and Connor Jr. are over there in the camp with Connor, the Notorious. So we're looking forward to teaming up with them, on Fight Week. We're flying over on the 3rd of October, so we're eagerly awaiting. We're counting down the days for this one.
Yes, and I was going to ask you about that. What is the buzz like in Dublin these days for this fight? We haven't seen him in almost 2 years in MMA. How would you describe it now as we get closer to October 6th?
Yeah, I can sense it. It's almost palpable now. Wherever I go, I was in the local shopping center today. I had people coming up to me and asking me my views on it, my opinion on it, and, they were stopping for photographs. So I can sense the fever pitch is beginning to increase, the people are getting behind, as usual. Yeah.
What did you make of the press conference last week? That has been scrutinized. Some people loved it, some didn't like it. What did you make of it?
Well, as I said, over on this side of things, the press conferences are what they are. There's insults flung both ways. But I think there are certain lines you just don't cross. Khabib disrespected me and my abilities of fatherhood. I thought that was below the belt. But I won't settle the score on that one. My son will settle the score on that one on the 6th of October.
Wow, when did he do that? I don't know if I saw that one. What did he say? When did he do that?
Yeah, but he questioned my ability of fatherhood.
Really?
So, he questioned my ability of fatherhood. But I would have to add on that. I mean, his own father encouraged or maybe forced him to fight animals. I mean, that's almost barbaric to me. I mean, that's like the Dark Ages. What father would force their son to fight bears, even though they could be at that time declawed, chained by the neck, and probably stupefied? But I wouldn't. I mean, in a civilized 21st century, that would be almost constituted as child abuse. So don't worry, getting off that. My ability of fatherhood was off skew.
Dana White called the press conference one of the darkest in UFC history because there was politics discussed, Vladimir Putin, Dagestan, Chechnya, all kinds of things. Does it ever make you uncomfortable? This is your son. There's some people out there who might take umbrage with these comments. Are you ever uncomfortable worrying for his safety?
Well, there's umbrage can be taken on both sides, So, no, it doesn't affect me anyway. They are what they are. At the end of the day, it'll all be settled in the octagon, and this particular one on the 6th of October. Mm-hmm. That's when the score will be settled. Forget about all the talk beforehand. That is when the issues will be dealt with. The issue of fighting.
A lot of people believe that Khabib is his toughest test, given the style matchup, given the fact that he is so good at wrestling. Are you worried at all this fight?
No, listen up. Excuse me for a moment till I yawn, Ariel. Honestly, this argument bored me. I've looked at this every which way. Even up to last night, I was looking at Khabib's fight. He's slow, he's sloppy, he's predictable. There's nothing in his arsenal, nothing in Khabib's arsenal that Conor fears. Nothing. He has no power. Conor's camp is possibly the most awesome camp to date. He's in peak physical condition. His power is unbelievable. When he strikes Khabib with that power, Khabib is too slow. He won't see this coming.
Conor's power, Conor's speed, Conor's precision. Khabib has nothing to counter that. Nothing. He's going to be gone in the first round, without a doubt. I've just looked at it every way, Ariel. There's no way Khabib is going to survive the second round on this one.
Wow, so you're predicting first round knockout?
We've had that old mugger before, the old groundwork.
Yeah.
Forget about groundwork. You know, he will not be able to stand Conor McGregor's power. It's unbelievable. Once Conor cracks his skull, that's it. Khabib is gone. He's too slow. And even if he tries to change and tries to be quick, he's going to fall back to his old ways. He's actually, to be honest with you, he's actually an amateur. I don't even know how he got to this level, really and truly. He's an amateur, you know, fighting amongst amateurs. This octagon is a different octagon than he's ever fought in. When he steps into this octagon on the 6th of October, he's stepping in with a highly tuned professional, not the amateurs that Khabib has faced.
I have to say, we have talked several times now. I don't recall ever hearing you this fired up. You're very passionate about this.
Well, on this particular one, I am. You know, I've seen, you know, I've heard all this talk, they're trying to dig him up. You know, I just don't see it. I honestly don't see it. And honestly, on the 6th of October, the truth will out. Conor is actually going to box him back to the amateur ranks where he belongs. I don't even know how he got to this stage to fight in Conor. What has happened?
This is incredible. Wow. So you're predicting first round knockout?
Absolutely and unequivocally first round knockout.
Wow. Okay.
Honestly. As I said, I've looked at it every which way. It's going to be a first round knockout. The power... Khabib cannot stand that power. He's too slow. He won't be able to. He won't be able to dodge Conor's power. The precision that Conor has, the kicks. It's a first round finish for me.
Could I ask? You know, as a father, you saw what happened in early April. Your son lands in jail. What are you thinking? What are you and your wife thinking? How worried are you? What's going through your mind as this is all unfolding? This is worldwide news, the biggest story, not only in sports.
Yeah, well,
what's going on?
The incident happened, and it's over, so I have no comment on it. You know, it's over. The situation's over, so we don't comment on it.
Okay. Were you concerned? Just for your son, for his well-being?
Well, Conor's a big man now. I mean, he's 30, he's a father himself, so he knows what he's about. I have no concerns for him anyway. You know, he's a world champion. I wouldn't have any concerns for a world champion. They're well out to the bath themselves.
How's your relationship with him these days? Like, are you checking with him at the camp? Do you go watch him spar? Are you as close?
Yeah, I've dropped in. I've watched him drop down. I keep in touch with his corner man, so I know exactly what's going down. I communicate with Conor regularly. Actually, in minding his dog at the moment. So, you know, keep in touch quite regularly, yeah.
And, you know, there was a time where people like Dana White were saying they didn't think he'd ever come back to MMA. Were you one of those people, or did you always believe that he would eventually return?
Yeah, of course he's going to return. That's where he belongs. That's where he's the king of MMA. So, you know, this is his arena. This is where he belongs. He was never going to leave. I knew he was always coming back.
What a week for him last week with the launch and the unveiling of his Proper 12 whiskey. I understand it is flying off the shelves in Ireland. Have you tried it yet, and are you blown away by its success thus far?
Yeah, you know, to even branch out, you know, and launch a business mid-camp is an amazing treat as well. I have tried it, Ariel. I mean, the name of the whiskey is Proper 12. It's been limited here. It's been limited to two bottles in one of the big supermarket chains. Because of that, there's that much of a demand. I do like the occasional whiskey, and of course, I'm a Proper 12 whiskey drinker now.
At any point, does your son, you know, cease to just kind of, you know, exceed your expectations? At any point, do you say to yourself, like, I can't, this, what more can he do? Right? Like, this is where I thought.
Yeah, you know something, Ariel? No,
yeah.
I'm never surprised. He never ceases to amaze me. It's all part of his plan. You know, he's building his empire. You know, it can go on for different times, and I don't know. You know, he built the MMA empire. Now he's his whiskey empire, his business empire. So, you know, I think he just wants to add on a few more zeros onto those multi-million.
It's incredible.
I think he has a billionaire plan in mind, maybe.
And what about for yourself? I'm still shocked that you don't have your own reality show. Someone surely, especially since this video came out, has to have reached out. I mean, your family is one of the most interesting. And I'm not just talking about Connor. I mean, he doesn't even have to make one appearance in the show, and it's still just incredible entertainment. How has this not happened yet?
Listen, Ariel, we've had good fun. I've had offers. I've been involved. I've been in discussions with TV production companies. I've had great offers. But due to different things, I've had to turn down offers. I've been involved in some great projects, some personal projects, and I'm taking over now. I'm coming out of retirement now. The brand ambassador was the first real offer of opportunity for me, and I took that opportunity. So I'm actually looking forward to getting back into the swing of things. But on the TV front, I have been in negotiations with TV production companies, and there are things in the future for me, TV-wise, yeah.
Wow. How close are we to getting this done?
Well, I've had the green light on two different projects, two really exciting projects, but due to various situations, I had to decline them. But even to get the green light from a TV company, director of national television, that was an amazing achievement anyway. So I still have offers in the bag. So 2019, I think, could be a promising year for me. 2018, actually, for me personally, has been a fabulous year. And I just can't see why it won't continue. The opportunities and offers will be coming my way in 2019.
When
will be availing of them.
When do you head out to Vegas? Go ahead. Yes?
We're heading out to Vegas on Fight Week, actually, on the Wednesday of Fight Week. Our family are heading over on block. As usual, then we'll be at the weigh-in. It's tradition with the McGregor family that we spend the evening of the weigh-in with Connor. All the heavy work is done then, so we just chill out with Connor. We might, have a supper, watch a movie, but his work is done then, and we just look forward to the following day, which is fight day.
I love it. And you are expecting, you are confident as ever, first round knockout. Handing Khabib
Ariel,
his first loss.
I just can't see anything other than a first round knockout. Khabib has nothing, absolutely. There's nothing in his limited Arab body. You hear groundwork, It's not enough. There is not enough when you come up against Conor McGregor. He needs more. He needs to be fast. He needs power. He doesn't have either.
Dare I say, Khabib and his team have the bloody cheek to think that they can stand and trade with Conor McGregor.
Well, they'll have the answer
at the 6th or so. Yeah, they'll be none too plus to hear this prediction, but I love it.
Yeah, they'll be none too plus.
I love it.
We'll be very plus.
Yes.
And I think the whole of Ireland, all the supporters worldwide, will be extremely well plus on the 6th.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Our hero will not let us down. Khabib is going down, and he's going down in the first round. He has nothing. There's nothing in his limited arsenal that Conor fears.
What a pleasure this has been. Thank you so much for doing this, Tony. I really appreciate it. Congrats on everything that's been happening for you and your family. Please send my best to Margaret, your lovely wife, the rest of your family. Congrats on the grandchildren as well. And, of course, good luck on the 6th of October. I hope to see you guys. That's a bit of a tradition as well. We always seem to bump into each other.
Yeah,
I hope to do
actually,
so again.
We will. I look forward to seeing you, and thanks for those kind words. Thanks for having me on the show this evening.
A pleasure as always. All the best to you. We'll talk to you soon. There he is, the one and only Tony McGregor, father for one Conor McGregor. What a character. I love that guy. He's unbelievable. He's amazing. Follow him on Instagram. We had the name up there, and I do believe he's new to Twitter as well these days. So he is one of a kind. He's a Renaissance man, always very busy. And if you haven't seen that video, I bet you're going to watch it now 10 more times because it's incredible. My wife and I, almost every night before we go to bed, we watch that for a nice laugh. It's incredible. It's just pure entertainment. The bloody cheek, none too plus. Amazing. It's one of the highlights since we launched the show, getting him to say that. All right, let us move along. In a matter of moments, seconds, we're going to be joined by Misha Tate. A lot going on in her life. She's got a bit of news to announce. In fact, her boyfriend, the father to her lovely daughter, Amaya, was just in action over the weekend for Bellator, made his long-awaited return, Johnny Nunez. He was victorious. What a great moment that was for him and the family. She's now kind enough to be joining us on the phone. Misha, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Ariel. How are you? It's been a while.
It has been a while. Wow, there is so much to congratulate you on. First and foremost, congratulations on motherhood. That's amazing. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you.
How is it going so far?
It's incredible. It's the coolest thing I've ever done. And I love my daughter to death. Like, she's my everything. So people always say, you know, you don't know until you know, but it's true. So you experience it. It's just something so mind-blowing, and I couldn't be at a better place in my life, to be honest.
That is great to hear. Now, is this something you always wanted to experience? Did you always want to be a mom?
No.
Really?
Actually, I was totally not sold on the idea for a long time until I met Johnny, and it didn't take me that long to figure out that I wanted to have his baby, so.
Wow.
It's crazy. Just when you meet the right person, you just know, and that's exactly what happened to me.
What has surprised you? Like, for me, the moment that my wife became a mom, like, I noticed a change in her for the better. Like, it was just amazing how she just became a mom. What has surprised you most about Misha Tate, the mom?
That surprised me the most? I think, perhaps it wasn't even myself. Like, I love her so much. So I guess to realize that you can love something that much is kind of crazy, but I think my parents, like, becoming grandparents was the most surprising thing to me, as how much she matters to them. Like, I never thought about it before. I never thought about what a beautiful gift it is for my parents. You know, it's just so, I mean, I guess it's natural, but it's just amazing to me to watch them just devour her. They just love her to death, and it just brought our family so much closer. So I think that's probably the most surprising thing.
And now I do believe for the first time since you became a mom, and I think it might be for the first time since you were with Johnny, he competed, right? And he won over the weekend in Boise on Friday for Bellator. What was it like for you now, you know, your family, you know, seeing your partner, the father of your child, in action? How is that different, you know, from the past, seeing him actually go out there and compete in a fight and you're on the sidelines?
Well, it was a different perspective. It was totally a different perspective. You know, I got to sit in the crowd and I held my daughter while we watched him compete, and she got to watch her dad win. It was her first fight going to live, and it was just, it was a wonderful experience. I was being on the totally opposite end of the perspective than I ever have been. So for me, it was very eye-opening. It was very enjoyable. I loved it. I thought I wasn't going to be nervous at all. But it's like, as soon as I walked in there and I had her in my arms and I saw the cage, like, my stomach dropped, and it was so weird. It was just a totally different experience. I got to experience more like what it is to just be a fan in the audience and watch your loved one compete.
Was that her first fight that she attended?
It was.
What was it like going to, you've been a part of this game for a long time, now you go as a mom with your daughter. What was that like?
Oh, it was intense. It was really enjoyable, though. I think she brought a sense of calmness to it all. Like, I actually made my way over to the walkout, the section where I knew Johnny was going to be coming out, and he was able to come over and give her a kiss before he went into the octagon. And I think it just gave him a different sense of motivation. Like, he told me, you know, Trevor Whitman, who is Rosen Namajunas's coach, and Justin Gaethje's coach, during the training camp, that he had come over and kind of gave him a pep talk. And I think also, you know, our coach, Eric Nixick, had come over and told him, like, you got to think, like, this guy's trying to hurt your baby or kill your baby, you know. And it just was, I think, a different mindset for him. You know, he went out there and dominated three rounds. And it's so crazy when you have something bigger than you. You know, my daughter is bigger than me. She's more important than I am. She's more important than anything. So it's such a cool experience. Being a parent is the most rewarding thing that I've ever done.
Being there, does it give you the itch ever to come back?
You know what? I don't feel like I miss anything. You know, I'm in such a good place. I'm so happy. I'm so fulfilled. And I had such a long career. You know, it's not like... I know people think that I'm retiring young, but I started young. You know, I started wrestling when I was 15, and I started fighting at 19. So I fought for like 12 years, and I did it all. I started at the very bottom, Ariel. I started for for no money, fighting as an amateur, and then fighting for pennies on the dollar as a professional, not being taken serious, no opportunity. The UFC was like, we're not going to have women fight ever, all the way to fighting as the main event in the UFC, defending my UFC World Championship. You know, I don't feel like I missed anything. So right now I'm in a great place. Who knows if that will change, but you know, if it does, it does. I have time and I'm not even focused on it at the moment. I'm so content where I'm at that I don't have to think about it. You know, I'm fortunate that I put enough cash flow away. I invested, my home is paid for, my cars are paid for. Like, I don't need to fight for money. I'm in a great place financially, and yeah, I'm happy. So not missing much.
You can hear it in your voice as well. You sound supremely happy, and I'm happy for you. That is great to hear. You are no stranger to big weekends in Las Vegas, big UFC weekends. There's a big one coming up in a couple of weekends, October 6th. But the night before, you're going to be involved with Quintet, their third event. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago with Uriah Faber. How will you be involved?
So I am going to commentate the show. So I'm really excited because this brings a totally different perspective on grappling. It's 5-on-5, and it's a team. So what I'm really excited about is we get to see Uriah Faber grapple Sakuraba, which I think is going to be so cool. I'm really excited to commentate that. It's 8 minutes. They grapple each other for up to 8 minutes, and if neither one of them gets a submission, then they're both eliminated from the contest, and the next set comes out. But if someone does get a submission, for instance, if Uriah Faber beats Sakuraba, submits him, then the next in line on Sakuraba's team comes out, who would be Josh Barnett. So we may see Uriah Faber grappling Josh Barnett, which I also think would be intensely interesting. So I'm excited to be a part of it and just, you know, guide people through the submissions and talk about it, because I love talking about grappling and I love being able to educate people as the action unfolds. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's Quintet 3, October 5th, Orleans Arena in Las Vegas. Tickets available right now. It's live on Fight Pass. There's the team matchups, as you mentioned, but also two super fights, Frank Mir versus Satoshi Ishii and the 16-year-old prodigy Nicky Ryan against Hideo Tokoro. So something for everyone that night. And I know you've competed in grappling, you know, as well. These seem to there's like a lot of momentum behind these now. It seems like for whatever reason, the stars are aligning in the grappling world to where, you know, fighters can actually make some legit money doing this and not have to get punched in the face, right?
Hell yeah.
Finally.
Which I love, because I totally want to compete in grappling still. I want to continue to do that, and I think that's where I'll feel my competitive edge. You know, it's, I think once a fighter, always a fighter. And to me, grappling is a form of fighting. I mean, grapplers call fighting fighting. I don't call grappling fighting, because to me, there is a distinct difference. Like, fighting is getting punched in the face. Grappling is grappling. But you still get the chance to try to, you know, choke someone out or tear someone's arm off or whatever. So I enjoy that competitive aspect, and I definitely want to look to compete myself. So who knows? Maybe on Quintet 4 or 5, you know, maybe I'll have an all-female team and put together a team and, you know,
that would be incredible.
Another top female team or something like that. So
I love that. That's an amazing idea. I didn't think of that. Yeah, the 5-on-5, you know, five females against other five females. You're a captain, another famous fighter, MMA fighter, captain of the other team. That's a brilliant idea. And so you're doing this. You also have your Sirius show called MMA Tonight. That's every Tuesday night, correct, on Sirius XM?
This is every Wednesday. So it's Tuesday. It's actually Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, but I host the Wednesday show.
Okay.
With Ryan McKinnell. And yep. Then AJ and RJ host on Tuesday, and I think also on Thursday as well. But yeah, so you can catch it 3 days out of the week, but the best one is on hump day, obviously.
Yes.
On Wednesday.
And not just because of you. Ryan's the man. I love listening to Ryan, so he's a great partner for you to have as well. So allow me to ask you now to put your analyst hat on. Can I get your prediction? October 6th, who do you got, Conor or Khabib?
I'm thinking Khabib's going to get it done. I think that he's going to grind Conor out. You know, I wouldn't be surprised, though, if it does go the distance, because I think that Conor is incredibly tough. And I think that, you know, Khabib is such a grinding style fighter that a lot of times it doesn't necessarily lead to a finish. But that's also what makes it exciting, because I think as the rounds go, I think Conor McGregor has a chance every time that they start standing, to be honest. He's really accurate and he's very powerful and he tends to surprise a lot of people. So I'm not underestimating him in this, but you know, Khabib is, he's never lost a round. He's quite the athlete. And, I would anticipate that he should win this fight. So with that being said, I'm looking forward to it. You know, I'm not counting Conor out. He surprised me one too many times, so I can't take that away from him.
But you are leaning toward, gun to your head, you're leaning towards Khabib at this time.
I am.
Could I ask you also about someone you know about, Amanda Nunes, going up against Chris Cyborg, maybe the biggest women's fight of all time? Who are you favoring at this time in that one?
Well, if I may break it down for you real quick.
I would love for you to.
Yes, I'm going to say that I obviously think that Cyborg's going to win. I think Cyborg is the woman to beat. And until I see something largely monumental that's going against Cyborg, she's pretty much always going to be the one that I pick against any other woman on this planet. That being said, that Amanda hits like a man. I can say that firsthand. She hits so hard, and it looks like it's effortless. She's very natural at it. She's got this like falcon-like wingspan that's very, very long. I wouldn't be surprised if they have at least the same reach. You know, she's got a very long reach, and she uses it really well. So what I will say is that Cyborg may be surprised by how hard she gets hit by Amanda. I don't believe that Cyborg is going to want to walk through the punches like she does with almost every other female she's ever fought. Like, you're not going to want to do that against Amanda. She might be smaller than you, but she packs one hell of a punch, and she could hurt Cyborg. She could definitely, she has the power to knock Cyborg out. I do believe that. I don't think it's going to happen this fight, but I think that if Cyborg doesn't actually come in with a strategy, if she just wants to bully Amanda like she does with a lot of other girls she can get away with, she might get hurt. Like, she could walk into right hand and seriously get hurt. So that's what makes this fight interesting, is I really believe that Amanda is the most powerful striker that Cyborg has fought.
Wow. This is fast. Okay, so December might be the best month in women's MMA history because they just announced Valentina Shevchenko versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Can you give us a preview of that one since you're so willing?
So excited for that fight. I am so excited. You know, Joanna's coming up to 125, but I think that's honestly going to suit her better anyways. I know that they fought each other in kickboxing before, and I believe that Joanna won in the striking department. What I like about this fight is the development that I've seen coming from Shevchenko's side in her wrestling, actually. She's actually good. She's very explosive, and I think that separates her from a lot of the other women in the division. Like when she went against Juliana Pena, you know, Juliana is a great friend of mine, but I was very surprised at the explosivity and how effective Shevchenko was when she did get that takedown against Juliana, and then how quick she snatched up that arm. I mean, she has no hesitation whatsoever. And I think that she's more explosive than Joanna. So I think if they get tied up, I actually give the edge to Shevchenko. I think that Shevchenko can get Joanna down. But obviously we've seen it before with the striking with these two in kickboxing. So I think Joanna has the edge there. Again, really, really exciting fight. You know, mixed martial arts is a totally different game. So anything can happen between those ladies. The fact that they have fought each other before in another style doesn't always translate to mixed martial arts. There's a whole other aspect we have to consider, and that's the wrestling and grappling. And I think Shevchenko has the edge there.
And in fact, they've actually fought three times in Muay Thai. Shevchenko's actually 3-0 against Joanna in Muay Thai.
Oh my goodness. Okay. I thought it was the other way. I thought that Joanna had won in the striking department. So, well then, this might be a very interesting fight then. If it is, then Shevchenko would probably have the edge in both departments, but it's mixed martial arts. Like, you don't really know. You know, you never know what's going to happen. So, very exciting to see this fight. If I have to pick one, then I'm going with Shevchenko.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, Misha, before I let you go. There was like all kinds of drama between you and John Jones back in February. Now that he got the 15 months, what do you make of that?
You know what? I think that I hurt John Jones' feelings, and I certainly didn't mean to, but I call it like it is. You know, I am not, I'm sorry if I did hurt his feelings. I'm sorry if he feels that me feeling frustrated at the situation is wrong on my part, or that I shouldn't be disappointed in some way. You know, I was, but I am happy that he's coming back to the sport because I'm a big fan of his, and I would like to see him compete. So I'm not the one who's going to sit there and say what should or shouldn't happen for John Jones. You know, they're making these decisions, not me. I just really hope that he has learned something from all of this. I hope that the punishment is harsh enough. You know, we'll find out, but I hope he comes back and abides by the rules and can fight as the athlete I think we all want to see him as. You know, we all want to see John Jones just be John Jones and get out of the way of himself. You know, he is really his biggest opponent at this point, and you know, I hope he comes back and does it right this time.
You're doing a phenomenal job post-fighting, Misha. Congratulations on all your success. Again, Misha is going to be a part of Quintet 3 on October 5th, the night before UFC 229 in Las Vegas. Also hosts her own SiriusXM radio show Wednesday night, as she just said, MMA Tonight. Her partner, her boyfriend, Johnny Nunez, victorious on Friday. And most important of all, she is now a mom. How great is that? Congratulations on everything, Misha. Thanks for coming on the show today. Really appreciate it. Great to talk to you again. Hope to see you out there in Vegas.
I appreciate it. We'll see you out there, Ariel. It was good chatting.
All right. Looking forward to that. There she is, Misha Tate. Again, a part of Quintet 3 on October 5th. Sean Wheelock, former Bellator play-by-play man, will be on the microphone alongside Misha Tate. Lenny Hart, our friend, the one who does the intro, will be the ring announcer. So as we said, two super fights were just announced as well. Frank Mir involved. They've got all the teams lined up now. It's Team Sakuraba versus Team Alpha Male versus Team Polaris versus Team 10th Planet. And then the two super fights. Wow. If you're not there, check it out, UFC Fight Pass. All right, let's move along to our next guest. Eric Anders versus Thiago Santos, a main event that materialized on just 6 days this past weekend in Sao Paulo. In the end, Santos wins via TKO, doctor stoppage, at the end of the third round. Tough to see the scenes at the end of that round as Eric Anders was trying to get to his corner, collapsing a couple times. He did not speak after the fight, wanted to check in with him, see how he's feeling as he's back home in the United States. He's kind enough to be on the phone here for a couple minutes. Eric, how are you?
I'm doing good. Yourself?
Well, good to talk to you, man. That was a scary scene, and a lot of people were concerned. How are you feeling? Could you tell us off the bat, just how are you feeling just a couple of days later?
I feel a lot better now. Got some much-needed rest and, 10-hour flight back home, but, you know, all good now.
What were you feeling? Do you remember what you were feeling in those closing moments of the fight?
Man, I was just exhausted. You know, I've been playing sports and doing stuff like this my whole life, and never have I ever felt so exhausted in my life. You know, it wasn't an act. You know, I was just trying to get to my stool to, you know, come out for the fourth round. But man, you know, I was fully coherent. You know, I could hear my coach. You know, the cut man. I could hear and see what everybody was saying. I just, you know, just want to go make it.
Was that more about the lack of training camp, the lack of preparation, as opposed to anything that he was doing to you in the fight?
I think so. I was sparring for this fight. You know, I was training, but, you know, not doing a lot of cardio. You know, that was, you know, we fought at quite a pace for, you know, the whole 15 minutes. There wasn't a lull in the action too much at any point. So I think the pace of the fight, the lack of preparation, there was a lot of things that kind of came to a head there at the end of the round.
Do you agree with the stoppage?
Yeah, man. Even if I didn't make it back to the stool and stood up for the fourth round, you know, it probably would have been a lot worse for me had, you know, he been able to get his hands on me in that fourth round.
Have you watched the fight?
I haven't.
Have you seen that closing clip?
Yeah, I've seen where, the round ends and, you know, I kind of roll back. Mark Goddard's legs are, you know, holding me up. He steps back. I fall back. I try to get up, fall down, try to get up again and fall down again. And, you know, at that point, you know, they were like, you know, just chill. The fight's over. Just stay down. You know, do whatever you got to do.
What is that like for you to see that, to see yourself in that state?
Man, I went out on my shield, man. I gave it everything I had, you know. I slept good that night. You know, I rest, you know. I don't think there's anything to hold my head head down about. You know, I went out there and literally gave it everything I had, and I'm okay with that.
Do you regret taking the fight?
No, not at all, man. Regardless of the outcome of how it ended and all that, you know, I had a lot of fun in that fight. You know, I learned a lot about myself, and not very many people can say that they've literally pushed themselves to the limit. And, you know, I can say that.
So what did you learn about yourself?
Man, you know, I was tired long before the end of that third round, and, you know, I was able to push myself and literally take it to the point of exhaustion where, you know, you can't even get up off the ground anymore. You know, there have been several times, you know, a lot of people say, oh, I was exhausted. But it's more of a mental thing. This wasn't a mental thing. This was literally a physical thing. So, you know, I enjoyed the fight. I had a lot of fun during the fight, regardless of, you know, how it ended and all that.
How was the weight cut?
The weight cut was groovy, man. You know, I walk around and like, you know, 220, 225. So to get to 205 is super easy. You know, that first 15, 20 pounds, you know, comes off, you know, that's like a dietary thing. And then, you know, it is a little bit more difficult to make 185, but, you know, 205 is no sweat.
Any chance you liked it so much that you're going to stick around at 205?
Man, I'm definitely open to take 205 fights, but I think for longevity in my career, I think the 185 is the place for me.
And correct me if I'm wrong here, you really want to fight in December after going through that? Is that possible?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's like 3 months away. You know, that's perfect time to get it. Me and my wife take off to Spain tomorrow, so I get a week. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to, you know, eat, sleep, and have a good time. And, you know, so that gives me plenty of time to, you know, have more than 8 weeks of camp and, you know, rest, recover, and get ready for that.
You don't want to just chill after going through all that, 6 days, exhaustion, all that, like maybe just take the rest of the year off?
Nah, man, that's not me, man. I'm a workhorse, man. I like to get back in there. I love training. I love everything about this sport, and, you know, I want to do it as much and as often as I can.
What about your guy, Elias Theodoro, giving you props? Did you see that?
I saw that. I think the entire MMA community saw what happened, and, you know, the feedback has been great. To be honest, man, I thought there'd be a lot of people talking a lot of shit. But, you know, there really hasn't. I really haven't heard, read, or seen anything with you know, people, you know, attacking me or whatever. So, you know, the people who fight, man, they know what's up, man, you know. So, you know, they know that fighting somebody on 6 days, less than a month after your last fight, you know, right after a fight, man, usually the guys and girls, they, you know, eat whatever, do whatever, and they're not really training for real. So, you know, they get it.
At some point in the future, would you love to get another crack at him with a full training camp? Is this something that you would love to see happen?
Yeah, absolutely, man. You know, Thiago's tough. I'm not taking anything away from him, but I think with the he definitely won the fight, no doubt. But I think with the full training camp, you know, that fight turns out a little bit differently. You know, he was pretty tired and pretty exhausted himself, even after the second round. So, you know, I fought 5 rounds twice before, and I've never, you know, been gassed or tired or anything like that. You know, this is my 13th fight, and that's never happened. So I think, under the right circumstances, I walk away with the W.
And I just want to mention, because I just heard from him via Twitter DM, the referee in charge of that fight was the great Mark Goddard. He corrected me, so I wanted to correct it on the record with you on the phone that he was the one who called off the fight. I said a doctor stoppage. It was actually his call in between the third and the fourth round. And clearly, I think no one disagrees, including yourself, with that call. It was hard. I must say, I felt for you, my man. It was tough to watch that. I don't want to see any fighter collapse like that. But I'm happy you're saying it was just from exhaustion, nothing else.
There's nothing to be, you know, there's nothing to be sorry or sad about. You know, I went out on my shield. You know, I'd rather go out like that and lose a fight like that than the way I lost to Machida. That's heartbreaking, you know. But to go out there and give it your all and literally collapse from exhaustion, you know, I can live with that.
Well, great stuff, man. Thanks for taking the fight on such short notice, putting together such a great fight. What a performance on just 6 days' notice against an incredible fighter, a heavy hitter. You certainly laid it all on the line, and a pleasure as always to watch you. And thanks for coming on the show after just landing back in the United States. Enjoy your vacation. You deserve it, Eric. Well done.
Hey, appreciate it, brother.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. There he is, your boy Eric Anders, literally collapsing due to exhaustion. He said it was only exhaustion. Props to Mark Goddard for calling it off. That was the right call. Scary sight, but glad to hear that he's okay. All right, let's move along. Bring in our in-studio guest. What a pleasure it is to have royalty in studio. Second time we talked to her in studio. The great Kayla Harrison is here. Wow. The face of PFL. How are you? Welcome. I've moved, Kayla. Yes, absolute royalty is in the house. I don't know if you know this, but I've moved. We're not in the same place, Kayla. We're now with the worldwide leader. I don't know if you've heard of ESPN. It's a pretty big deal here in the United States. You can put that up. Yeah, do whatever you want. Nice of Eric to help you. Eric, can you help out Kayla with the microphone? She's going to knock over her drink. She's got her own personal stylist, I do believe, with her. I saw on Instagram someone tagged me. Who was that?
That's my best friend.
Oh, okay.
One of my best friends. I got my two best friends here.
Okay.
So they're my stylists, my makeup artists.
Just helping you out.
I just roll with
entourage. It takes a village.
It takes a village.
Yes.
When it takes a village in the cage and outside of the cage.
Do you mind coming a little closer? Okay. There's a little thing there that
is
gets
that
in the way.
Is?
But you're strong. You could go right on top of it over there. Okay. You see that? There she is.
How are we?
We're good. Jake, fix the lighting over there. I know you played around with it a little bit, but it's a little bit blown out there, so if you can help me. Kayla, we're DIY here, Kayla. But there you look great. Well, we just have to do a little bit of adjusting. But you know what? We'll get there, Kayla.
Okay, I'll take it. I'm not worried
Thank
about
you
it.
For coming.
It's my pleasure.
How are you?
Thanks for having me again. Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
A lot going on in your life. So
you could say that, yeah.
Now you're 2-0. Since the last time we spoke after the 1-0 fight.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're 2-0.
2-0.
But there was some big news last week.
Mm-hmm. Pretty big news, yeah.
You're going to be part of a 155-pound tournament. 12 women. Next season, 155. You are working your way down.
To 145.
Your last fight was 150.
No, and last fight was 155.
Was it?
Yeah, we were going to do a catch weight at 150 because I couldn't find,
okay.
We couldn't find an opponent. And they wanted me to have fights, you know, want me to get some experience. But then Josette stepped up and she was like, I'll fight her. So then I didn't have to catch 150.
Okay, so why 155 and not the original plan, which was 145 for the actual tournament?
Honestly, we had talked about doing a tournament. We had talked about, you know, adding that to next year. And I had always assumed that it would be at 145. And that's what my managers, we all just figured that's what it was going to be. And my coaches didn't want me to do a tournament because they're like, it's a lot of pressure. It's a little fast. You need to get experience. You're only going to have two fights, maybe three. But I said, listen, if the PFL is going to have a women's division, a tournament, like, I'm going to be in it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to be in the tournament.
Yeah.
And then one of the owners said, listen, why would we want you to cut weight? Why would we want you to kill yourself? Let's break barriers. Let's do it at 155. And I said, why not?
Are there 12 women who are professionals who compete at 155 on this planet?
You're the journalist. I don't know
if there are. I don't know
well,
if there's 12
you know,
145ers.
That's the thing is, like, they're getting a lot of backlash about that.
Are they?
You know, I think so.
Okay.
I think the only negative comments have been, who is she going to fight?
Right.
But you start where you start. Were there, like, 10
sure.
125-pound guys 20
yeah.
years ago
right.
that were fighters?
Right.
Probably not, but
can you name another 150? Like, do you know anyone that they've signed?
I don't know anyone in MMA.
Period?
I'm just kidding.
You know Tony Martin.
I know of him.
What do you mean you know of him? What
no,
was that?
No, I know Tony.
I didn't recognize him when you guys were in the car.
I know.
Incognito. I felt horrible afterwards.
Someone you should
like,
have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was he mad at me for that?
Mm-hmm.
For
he
not
was really
giving
upset.
Him props?
He can't wait to see you
yeah.
in person. And, no, he wasn't
me
upset.
Up.
No. He
I'm sorry, because it was kind of hard to tell on the
well,
screen.
Well, we were like in the car on
the
side
car.
Of the
yeah,
highway
I wasn't
being really
I didn't
awkward.
Know you guys were – I didn't
we
know.
We are an item, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is this something born in the world of MMA?
Yes.
ATT?
Well, he trained in Boston for a little bit, but we were just friends there and then sort of just – became more.
Okay. So I thought you went to ATT and Mike Brown. You know, you went for Tony.
Well, that's not true.
Okay.
Okay. First of all, I'm my own person. I make
yes.
my own decisions.
Wow. Okay.
Not
my
based
bad.
On significant others.
I'm sorry. Okay. My bad.
Second of all, I went to a bunch of different gyms And then I went to ATT.
Right.
You know, I went to Jersey, I went to Vegas, and then Tony's like, listen, you need to come to ATT, you need to check it out. So I went down, and this is the one and only time in public, I will say, but he was right.
Wow. Okay.
See what you made me do?
I'm sorry.
5 minutes into the interview, he's going to never shut up about this now.
Was he in your corner for the two fights?
No.
No, you don't want him there.
No.
Who wants?
He's my significant other. He's not my coach.
No, okay, but sometimes people do that.
I mean, he's there with me all week, and he's, you know, we're very supportive of each other's careers, but he's, there comes like a, I have never dated anyone who's technically better at what we do than me. Like, I've always dated judo guys.
Yeah.
And I'm the best, so you know, I never had to put up with their shit or like listen to them tell me what they think.
Right,
but
right.
He has more experience than me and is technically at this moment in our lives better than me.
Wow.
At MMA. So it's very humbling for me to.
I could tell it's like almost hard for you to verbalize this, right?
Yes.
This is painful.
No, I mean he is. He's probably, in my opinion, he's one of the most underrated fighters in the world. And he's fighting on the October 6th card in Vegas against Ryan LaFlair.
You going to be there?
I'll be there.
Okay.
Front row, screaming my head off. And I think what's tough about this sport, especially if you fight for certain organizations, is you don't really – it doesn't matter how good you are. Sometimes they just don't give you a chance, you know. So I hope that he makes some waves. It's going to be a hard night to make waves just because it's such a big card and so many eyes are going to be on that main event. But – he's very well-rounded, like dynamic, explosive. You know, he's from when he started to where he is now, he's a great fighter.
Mm.
You know, and you see him in the gym and you see how hard he works and how bad he wants to be champion. You know, he's not one of those guys who's like, "Oh, I made it to the UFC." No, he's like, "I want to be UFC champion.
Yeah.
That's what I want." And it sucks cuz it's not in his power. Who knows if he'll get that shot, you know? But that's what made me fall for him. You know, he wants to win. And when you have that sort of common desire, like you have that in common, it brings out, I think we bring out the best in each other.
You train together?
Not anymore.
Oh, why? Why anymore? That's an interesting
word.
Well,
when we first met, he was like helping me with my grappling and stuff.
Yeah.
My cage wrestling and all of that in Boston. And then we went down to ATT and the first week I trained with him and Mike and Mako, everyone was kind of like, yeah, they're not going to train together anymore.
It just got too intense?
It's just kind of tense, yeah. Well, we're the ultimate competitors.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Like when we're not on the mat, we're like playing mini golf or we're playing Uno or we're playing Monopoly or we're playing cribbage or we're playing rummy. Like we're always doing some
competing.
Kind of. Yeah. We're like racing each other to the car. It's like not normal. So in at training, like especially if we drill together. You know, I get amped up easy, and then he like makes fun of me for getting amped up, and then I get more amped up, and it's just like it's a slippery slope. So
and he doesn't hold back.
What do you mean? Like when
he's going you know 100% with you. He's trying to tap you. He's trying to embarrass you.
No, I don't think he's like.
No, okay,
I don't think
he's not
like
that competitive.
Trying to like go like take me out. Or
okay,
anything.
Okay.
I mean it's just drilling.
Okay, okay.
We're not
only drilling.
We never
don't like sparring. Okay, okay.
We sparred one time, but that was like when I first met him and I cried.
Really?
Afterwards, yeah.
Wow. Why?
Because it doesn't matter who it is in front of me. Like, I don't care if you're John Jones. Like, I hate it if you get the best of me.
Right, right, right.
So I was really upset.
I feel like what you were just saying about like him not getting touched, that's kind of your roundabout way of plugging the PFL. No matchmakers. I feel like that's ingrained in you. Like you don't have to go through the politics.
It's not ingrained in me. It's just what I believe. Like,
yeah,
you don't,
but that's why you love PFL.
Yeah, I'm not a. I am their spokesperson, but it's also it just happens to be like what I actually believe. I hate that. I hate that about this sport. That's the one thing. I'm like, it doesn't matter if you're the best fighter in the world. Like you have to. There has to be something. It's entertainment. And the crazy thing about Tony is, not to keep talking about him, because this is obviously about me.
No, it's fine.
But.
Is he here?
No.
Can he come to
thank God, no.
Right.
He'd be in here.
Yes.
He'd be like, who's the Uno champ? Who's the Rummy champ? Tell him everything. But I'm the champ. But the crazy thing, what was I talking about?
I was asking you, it sounded like you were kind of plugging the PFL because you love the fact that there's no politics, there's no matchmaker. That's the one thing you hate about this sport, is that I guess your mouth leads you to title shots. I remember when you won your second gold medal, the press conference.
Yeah,
you had some. Everyone thought like, oh, there's no way she's coming to MMA after this.
I didn't think there was either, but yeah. I was wrong. But the PFL has also created a platform where you don't. It's going to be entertainment because it's a sport. It's not entertainment and then a sport. You know, it's a sport that's going to be entertaining.
You're the face of the PFL. Are you comfortable with that?
Cool.
You are the face. There's no doubt about it.
Thank you.
When you think PFL, you think Kayla Harrison, which is somewhat ironic because you weren't a part of the tournament. You were the only.
I know.
You know what I mean? You go against everything that I don't necessarily think you need to be a part of a tournament, but yeah. I respect the fact that you want to be a part of one.
Of course. Well, that's what I believe in. You know, am I ready? Probably. Experience-wise, no, but am I going to find a way to win? Yes.
And they're about to have their first playoff, mm-hmm. October 5th, the night before the October 6th card. So now it's really going to get interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't necessarily comment on that, but now that the whole like regular season is completed, what did you make of it?
You know, I think there are a couple kinks. Like, they're not perfect. You
like
know,
what?
Well, I mean, for one, I think that the season needs to be a little bit longer.
Interesting.
A lot of people had injuries or couldn't get medically cleared to fight in time. So you have a guy who's coming in who's like hasn't even had a fight in the PFL. You know, that doesn't really look good. But I understand it's their first year. They're getting out all the kinks. They're not going to be perfect. But I believe that when we tell them this information, you know, the CEO and the president and the owners actually listen to me for some reason. So
they love you.
I think so, yeah.
You're the face. They should listen to the face. They should listen to whatever you want. Everything you say, they should listen to.
Thank you.
When you fight...
No one listens to me.
You are must-see TV.
If Big Jim could hear you right now, he would be so upset.
Why? Why isn't he watching?
Because, well, first of all, it's the internet.
Yes,
so I mean, let's forget about that.
How old is he?
72.
Okay, fair enough.
71. He'll be 70.
I mean, by the way, not that old in today's day and age as far as
the
internet is concerned.
He texts now, so it's a big deal, kind of, but... Well, he doesn't know how to text back, but I know if I send him a text, he'll read it.
Okay.
And then he'll call me about it, which defeats the purpose, yeah. But I mean, it is what it is.
Right. But when you fight, it's must-see TV.
Thank
Everyone
you.
Is watching.
You think so?
I know so.
I don't think so yet, but...
I see it.
I think
At least in our little community right now, everyone's watching. It's a big deal. And I love the fact that you're on NBC, at least for your first fights, because mm-hmm. they can use the footage of the Olympics.
Yeah.
They are the rights holder,
that
right?
No, it is a huge deal.
So I think that was good in sort of introducing people who don't know who you are if they don't know.
Yeah. That's such a luxury, too. You like, no one, even the UFC can't use footage of Henry Cejudo.
No.
You know, so...
Yep. That stuff costs a lot of money.
Yeah, it does.
I understand, and I don't know how much you could talk about it. You signed a new deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many fights is this for? Or is it just like a one-year deal?
It's a one-year contract.
So if you don't make it to the playoffs, then the contract's over, right?
I don't know the exact wordage,
okay.
But if I lose before the playoffs, I automatically get to go into the tournament again next year.
Okay.
If I win the tournament, they have 30 days to re-sign me or renegotiate again for the following year.
Do you know when the tournament starts?
I believe. May. No. Hmm. Well, the season starts in May.
The
next
season
year.
Starts. Okay. Do you like that? That's a long layoff.
I don't love it, but I feel like the season should start even earlier than that for everyone.
Right.
But I think because of different TV broadcast issues and whatnot,
okay.
That's the earliest they can start it right now.
Because it's a one-year deal with NBC. They may be somewhere else next year, right?
I think.
What do you know? I feel like you're in these negotiations. You know everything. Why wouldn't they bring you to the negotiations?
They should, right? I get that deal done.
Yes.
No.
I heard that this is a very lucrative deal that you just signed. Are you happy with it?
I'm very happy.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I had to, like, turn off my phone when the deal first came to me because I was like, first of all, I was blown away. And I said, listen, I just need to take the weekend, which I think freaked them out. And they might have offered me more money.
Huh.
But it wasn't about... money. I just said to them, like, I have to make sure I'm doing this for the right reasons.
Wow.
You know, Big Jim said to me when I was 16, he said, if you want money, win, and the money will come.
Mm.
So that's something I've followed my whole life. I've never done judo for money. I've never chased a dollar, you know, but I've always found a way to live and be successful and be happy. And I was 16 years old. I showed up in Boston with $250 in my pocket. And now next year I'm going to be a millionaire before I'm 30. So it's crazy. But I had to say, like, I had to go and say, like, is this really what I want? Am I doing this for the right reasons, or am I doing it for the money? And once I realized, no, this is where I want to be, this is what I want to do, well, let's sign the deal.
Is it fair to say that these numbers exceeded your expectations when you thought, oh, I'm going to go into MMA and what I could make? You didn't dream of this, or you did?
I mean, after two fights, no.
Okay, wow. Millionaire, you just said.
By next year, yeah.
Wow. After one fight, after your third fight, will you be a millionaire?
No.
Or you have to go through the whole thing, you're saying? I tried to.
I'm going to win the tournament, and then yeah, I'll be a millionaire.
So that's like probably three fights regular season, and then...
Two fights in the regular season, okay. Two fights in the playoffs, and then...
And you have to fight on...
Or maybe three fights in the regular season.
I think it's three.
I think you're right.
And do you have to fight on the same night in the playoffs?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, how do you feel about that?
I think it's interesting. I don't know. I don't know why they do that. But, I mean, I understand why they do it. It's exciting. It's craziness. But for me, the system is still a little bit flawed.
How so? That's what I love about you. You don't hold back. You're a straight shooter.
Well, I tell them too. You know, I'm not going to like... It is what it is.
No, I appreciate that.
I say that a lot, don't I?
It's fine. Max Holloway says it too. It's like his catchphrase. But why? Why is it flawed?
Well, so... I mean, we haven't had a playoff yet, but right now the system is two rounds, and if each fighter wins a round, the fighter who won the first round wins the fight.
Yep.
I don't agree with that.
Okay.
That makes no sense.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, if you're going to do something like that, what Tony and I were arguing about, I said, why don't you just make it one 10-minute round then?
I was just going to say that. Like,
or
pride.
Who wins? Or what he said, which I also agree with, is if you're only going to do two rounds and they both win a round, whoever has the highest seed wins the fight. Because uh-huh, then in the regular season, people are going to want to get the higher seed because they're going to want to have that advantage in the playoffs. So you're going to have more exciting fights in the regular season.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a good idea, too. But I prefer one 10-minute round. I don't know what I prefer. I don't know.
It kind of goes against the idea of a fight. It's almost like the guy who start or the female who started the fight gets rewarded as opposed to the person who ends the fight. Like, the point of a fight is who's standing.
Well, unless you finish it.
Right. Unless you finish
it. If you knock him out in the second round, then obviously
No.
Win.
But I mean if it goes the distance, right?
Yeah. I don't get it.
How would you feel about 2 3-minute rounds and then there's a overtime extra 3 minutes?
I would be cool with that. But then you have to fight again that night.
Yeah.
That's also what's tough. And it's a law or it's some kind of rule. You can't have more than 5 rounds. You can't fight more than 5 rounds in a night or something, right?
Oh,
I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
You're the MMA expert.
I don't love two fights in one night. That's the one complaint that I have. I just feel like in 2018, with everything that we know, it's probably safer if you don't.
I agree. But I don't make the rules.
How's the sponsorship life treating you now that you're such a big star, face of the company? Olympian, what's out there?
I'm working with a company called United Lex.
Okay.
So they work in corporate law. They're the biggest corporate law firm in the world. They work with all the big Fortune 500 companies, and they're also my lawyer. So
oh, wow.
They help me with my contracts.
That's
which
good.
Is good. But we just, you know, signed a deal where I'm going to be their ambassador for a year.
Congrats.
And yeah, it's great. I'm very excited about it. We're still figuring out how we're going to implement that besides just, you know, wearing the logo on my uniform
because
I want to associate myself with companies that think the same way as I do.
Sure.
And that want to take over the world and that want to be leaders in what they do. And so United Lex was a good sign for me.
And, you know, I have a lot of respect for you. And I think that you conduct yourself, you know, I mean, you're an incredible role. I say that,
thank
like, you.
You
should be the face of the company and you should be the face of any company. But I want to ask you about something that's kind of come up in the build up to the Conor fight.
Okay.
You're managed by Ali Abdelaziz.
I am.
He is a lightning rod. He is a very polarizing figure. I'm sure
yes.
You see some of the things.
Yes. Like now every single one of my tweets gets at least a one, where's Noah comment.
How is it working for him, being represented by him?
Well, first of all, business is business.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about Ali's. I mean, we've talked. I've met his family. You know, I know that he's in contact with his son, Noah. I know that he spends time with him. I know that he helps him. I don't ask to what level. And I know that Ali has a past. Everybody has a past. You know, anyone who says they don't is a liar.
Hmm.
And I'd rather associate with someone who has a past than a liar.
Hmm.
And Jimmy brought me to Ali.
Hmm.
Jimmy asked Ali, can you take care of our girl? Ali said, I'll treat her like she's my sister. And so far, he's never gone back on that.
Hmm.
So he has my loyalty. I mean, I don't know his whole story.
Hmm.
I've never asked. I know that he has a past. I know that he has history. I know that he has baggage. But as long as you treat me good and the people around me good, and as long as there's nothing blatant screaming at me where it's like, oh, okay, this is too far. You've crossed a line. I'm going to treat you how you treat me. I mean, I don't know. Has he murdered someone that I haven't heard? I didn't hear about? You know?
You're happy.
With Ali?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're comfortable?
Yeah. I think that people...
Do you ever reach out to him and say, like, hey, what's going on? You say you get the tweets and everything like that.
Well, we talked the other day. I just asked him if he was okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He said, yeah, I'm fine. I talked to my son. You know, a bunch of different stuff, but... That's what I mean about MMA, man. Sometimes it's just like...
It's a little much.
Is that really necessary?
Right.
He looked like a crazy man.
Who?
Connor.
Okay.
I feel.
At the press conference.
Yeah.
You didn't like that. Not your style.
Not my style. But, I mean, obviously.
Some people love it.
Everyone loves it. They love it. Yeah. They hate it or they love it, but they watch it.
They have a thought.
He gets the job done.
Right.
I mean, he's... Did you see? I mean,
I was there.
Like, Dana took the whiskey. Like, Dana was afraid to say no to him. Yeah, like, yeah. He runs that show.
For he's him. The boss.
It's just not my style.
Okay. Who wins, by the way? Do you have a thought on that?
I mean, I respect both of them. I think, obviously, Connor has massive power and is capable. You know, he always is going to have a puncher's chance. He's capable of knocking anybody out. He's proven that time and time again. But I'm a grappler. You know, I think you can't stop. You know, Khabib was like, you cannot stop 100 takedowns. And I kind of agree with that. So we'll see. It's going to be, I mean, it's tough. Connor's never really fought a grappler. You know, he fought Mendez, but that was on what? How many days notice? Yeah. You know, it's not the same. And he was getting taken down and I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
I'm excited about it, but if I had to bet, I think I'd probably bet on Khabib.
Okay. I had Chris Cyborg on the show last week, and I asked her about you, and she kind of no-sold you. She was kind of like, eh.
I know.
You sense that from her? Like, she doesn't want to give you any props?
Why would she? I'm, like, the biggest threat she has.
But, I mean, she's been around for 10-plus years. You've been around for half a year. Like, she should be that... You should be so far in her rearview mirror.
Yeah.
You don't feel like that's the case?
I just think it's funny. Like, she... Something happened where she was like, who is she or something? But she follows me on Instagram. She follows me on Twitter. She follows me on every social media outlet. And then the other thing that I had a little bit of issue with was she said, oh, she knows where I am. You know, she knows where to find me if she can make 145. And I think that's so funny because what did she hate on Ronda about all those years? Ronda always said, she has to come down to me. She has to come down to me. I'm the champ. She has to come down to me. And now she's saying the same thing. That's so funny to me. But I will. I'll cut down to 145 if that's what she wants. I don't care.
You could do it.
Absolutely. To prove a point, for sure I will.
Honestly, how far away do you think we are from this actually being a thing? Like, this actually being a She's about to become a free agent, too, which makes this super interesting. How far away, skill-wise, confidence-wise, do you think?
Well, I think it all depends on what happens with her and my teammate, you know?
Yeah.
I think, but March, her contract is up.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to get another year of experience under my belt. I'm going to be 8-0. I'm going to, you know, success breeds success, and that really instills confidence in me. Every time I fight, I feel better and better and better and better. Not only that, but I'm training with the best girl in the world, you know? Amanda is a beast, grappling, striking, everywhere.
You train with her often?
Yeah, you know, she's starting to get ready, so she needs bigger girls, and you know, she's one of the main reasons I moved to ATT is to work with her. I mean, just like drilling, you know, combo for combo with her. It's amazing, you know? I guess it's just seeing the way she moves makes me move better. You know, makes me more comfortable, makes me more relaxed, makes me feel more confident in my striking. But to answer your question, I think a year from now, we got ourselves an exciting little, you know, I'll be 8-0 and I can say, let's do this.
So you think after that season, playoff, you'll
be
ready?
I almost didn't sign the contract, Ariel, because I didn't want Cyborg to retire and me not get a chance to fight her.
That is why
I almost didn't sign that contract, because I was like, if I sign with the PFL, I'm going to be with them for a year. I love them. I don't know are they going to sign Cyborg? Like, how's it going to work? What if she retires? But it doesn't matter. Even if she does retire, like, there'll be too much money involved. That fight will be way too exciting. She's going to come back.
Wow.
She's going to want to fight me.
Did you talk to anyone else?
No.
Just PFL?
Mm-hmm.
But this is your mission. You seem more set on getting this fight done than in our previous
discussions. I mean, I realize that with or without Cyborg, I can be successful. But I don't want anyone to ever question who the best pound for pound is. So.
Wow. It's a bit frightening.
Why?
I just sense like a motivation in you. Like, you are going to get this done. I see it. Like, you change.
I don't know. It's what
I
want.
You want to be the one to beat her.
I want to be the best. Yeah. You know, obviously, I hope my teammate wins. I hope Amanda wins. And I have nothing personal against Cyborg. It's not like I don't want to create some craziness out of nothing, but I want to be the best. That's all I've ever wanted in everything I do, whether it's friggin' doing the dishes or doing judo or strength and conditioning or MMA. Like, I want to be the best. That's it. Every time.
How would you grade your last fight?
Ugh. I was upset.
Why?
Afterwards. Like, I went in the back and I started crying.
Why? Why?
Because I was like, I had a little temper tantrum, you know. They were like, and Mike Brown's like, what's wrong? And Tony's like, what are you doing? Like, he's hugging me. Why are you crying? I'm like,
we're looking at some of it right over here.
I want to be, that's my first fight.
Oh, that's your first fight. Well done.
Good job,
Jake.
Guys.
Thank you, Jake. Thanks for that. It's coming, he says. I mean, really, this guy.
No, but I'm here saying that I want to be the best in the world, and I'm in my second fight, and I'm already going 3 rounds, and I didn't get I didn't finish the arm bar, and you know, everyone already compares me to Ronda, so they're already going to be like, oh, look at her. She's not as good. She went 3 whole rounds.
There it is, right?
That's the one.
Yeah.
But.
This bothers you?
It did, yeah.
Does it annoy you to watch it?
A little bit. I mean, I understand that when you go and you look at this fight, you can see I'm already becoming more well-rounded. I'm already developing. I'm becoming more comfortable. And it was great for me because where else am I going to get 15 minutes in a cage of experience like that? You know, that's invaluable.
Yeah.
You can't, it's not the same in sparring. No matter how much you try to emulate it, it's not the same as stepping in there. And one of the big things I've always been concerned about was my gas tank, you know, because in sparring, I still get really tired. Like, I get very, and that scares me because I was never tired in judo. I mean, I was like in training, I was tired, but in a match, no girl was ever going to outcondition me. Like, I could go forever. I could fight 20 matches in a row. But in sparring, I always get tired. And then I get, like, freaked out. And then I'm like, I don't understand why I'm not in shape. Am I not training hard enough? And they're like, no, you're in shape. Relax. Trust the process. So after the first round, at first I was panicked. I was like, oh, my God, I didn't finish her. And then I went back and I sat down and I realized, like, oh, my God, I'm not tired. Okay, this is okay. And we just stuck to the game plan. I was able to work on a lot of things that I needed to work on. So I'm now that I've had a chance to step away and look at the fight from the big picture, I'm happy with it. But at first, I mean, I'm my own toughest critic. I was like, I was so upset.
Wow.
And then Big Jim's yelling at me, quit your goddamn crying.
Ah.
Shut up. Jeez. You did everything we told you. Shut up. Like, you know, and then that makes me cry harder.
Oh, my. Are you a big crier? I'm a big crier.
I'm a huge crier.
Okay, good.
I just feel like it's healthy.
To let it out.
To let it out.
Let it flow.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with it.
And people always think, like, Tony gets so pissed at me.
For crying.
Yeah.
Feels good.
And he's like, God, you're such a crybaby. And I'm like, I'm not crying because, like, it's hard. I'm not crying because it hurts. Like, I'm crying because I want to be better.
Hmm.
I'm crying because I'm frustrated. That's how much I want it. Like, That's why I'm crying.
Are you going to cry right now?
No.
Okay.
Damn it.
Are you?
No, but it's always great. As like an interviewer, it's always a nice little feather. By the way, the last time we spoke.
Is that what journalists like?
No.
Is that their like?
No. Don't paint us with that brush. No. But I did want to ask before I let you go, and I know you're very tight on time because last time you kind of like cracked the whip on me. You're like, holy smokes.
I have an event tonight.
I know. Yeah. What event is it?
The Bonaconti Foundation.
Yes,
their
that's a
dinner.
Great cause.
Yes.
Okay, so I won't keep, because last time you were mad. You were like, this went way too long. I got places
no,
to go.
No, I have a great time talking to you. Yes. I didn't
you had
mean
like a,
it in
you
a negative.
You always have an event. Last time you had like a red carpet thing, if I recall, right?
Yeah, I had a movie premiere to go to.
Movie premiere.
Yeah.
Jeez, what a life. But you were very open about your past.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, since being so open about it,
mm-hmm.
have you heard from a lot of people who maybe thanked you for being open, who you
actually,
gave?
Actually, after your show even, a lot of people
even,
reached out.
What are you trying to say? We're a no, little rinky-dink show? Jeez Louise.
I didn't mean it like that.
Even people listen to your show. I mean, it's not Oprah or the Today Show, but.
No, I just meant.
I get
I mean, I've been talking about it for a long time.
Yeah.
You know,
it's not
since
news.
I was
yes.
22.
Right.
So,
Different audience, maybe.
Much different audience, yeah. I think, who had never been exposed to me or my story. So thank you for this platform. But yeah, I get emails, notes, a couple a week usually.
That's great.
And what the good news for me is now what's very exciting is it used to be what can I do? How can you help me? But now since I wrote the book, a lot of the notes have turned into, I read your book, I gave it to my daughter, and I just want you to know it's helping us to have this conversation. Or,
wow.
You know, I went through something similar and I read your book and I can't tell you how spot on it is, but you give me hope that there is a gold medal at the end of the tunnel or there is a light. And so even though I feel like my work is not done and I have a lot to do, like a lot, but I have very good plans, the first step, education and having that conversation, I think is getting easier and easier to do. So I'm pumped.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'll give you a fist bump because I get a little sweaty sometimes.
Me too. I have like...
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's
plagued me my entire life.
Me too.
Really?
That's why I wear black, because I sweat all the time.
Oh,
if I'm nervous,
okay,
if I'm
understand.
Like... Yeah.
I thought because of your palms sweating, why do you wear black?
Well, I mean, no, my palms,
in general.
Everything sweats. I get nervous when I'm happy. I cry or I sweat.
Okay, well,
that's
we have a lot more in
life.
Common than I thought. It kind of ends there. The athleticism and all that, it's kind of... but I wish you the best. Congratulations
Thank
on the
you
new
so much.
Deal.
Thank
Good
you.
Luck to Tony. Tell him
Thank
to say
you.
Hi. And I apologize for not
you should be
actually
sorry.
Singling
Maybe
him
Maybe you
out.
Have him on next time.
That would be
you
awesome.
You should have us on together. We're actually going to have our own TV show someday.
Really?
We're characters.
Okay.
You think I'm bad. Have him on the show.
All right.
He's insane.
I wish you the best again. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks, guys.
Enjoy. And one of our people will walk you out.
Sayonara.
Oh, yes. You have to sign our banner.
Oh, okay.
They told me to remind you. Do you mind?
No.
If you don't mind just putting your stuff.
Do you have a gold Sharpie?
Yeah, it's right there. See?
Is it gold?
Below? A gold, yes. Do we have gold, guys?
No, that would be bronze.
Yeah, we don't give her bronze. That's Rhonda's color.
Brown.
Womp, womp. You get it? Did you get what I said?
What did you say?
I said that's Rhonda's color. Dang.
All right, I'll do purple.
Okay, you do purple. There she is, our second person. We brought this late. We've had way more in-studio guests. But Kayla Harrison, I'll do the play-by-play. She is signing under the P, under the ESPN P, and one day we're going to give this away for charity.
My special one on there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, she gave us the Olympic rings as well. That is incredible. I might just sell that right now. I'm kidding.
All right,
thank
I'm
you so much.
Here.
All the best to you. There she goes.
Bye,
Kayla Harrison, royalty, 2-time Olympic gold medalist. There she goes. What an honor having her here in studio. And congratulations to PFL for signing her up. She's going to be a part of that 155-pound tournament in 2019. 12 women. Good luck finding them. And I want to remind you that their next event is October 5th, and that's the beginning of their playoff tournament. So it's PFL 8. It's going to be the featherweight and heavyweight playoffs, and that's October 5th at the Ernest N. Morial Convention Center in New Orleans, Louisiana. It's the featherweights and the heavyweights, guys like Andre Harrison and Jared Rochalt and Lance Palmer, biggest names in their heavyweight and featherweight playoffs going toe-to-toe, and they'll be fighting twice on the same night. So the night before UFC 229, you got Quintet. We spoke to Misha Tate about that. You also have PFL on NBCSN. All right. That does it for the interviews. As I told you at the top of the show, great day. So much going on in the world of MMA. Of course, there is so much more to discuss. Matter of moments, we shall record the post-show with New York Rick, and we'll talk a little more about the press conference last week in New York. We'll talk about John Jones. We'll talk about his suspension, the 15-month suspension. We shall also discuss Yoani Andrzejczyk, Valentina Shevchenko. We'll talk a little Proper 12. We'll talk a little Sao Paulo. We'll talk a little UFC 230 for you, Tyron Woodley surgery, maybe a little Bellator 205, but certainly a lot of Bellator 206. That's Rory McDonald versus Gegard Mousasi, the big fight coming up. What else shall we discuss? Maybe a little DAZN, maybe a little MMA action this weekend. The return of Sabina Mazo for LFA, Cage Warriors, Ryzen. So much going on, as always, in the world of MMA. But now we shall say goodbye. As far as the live stream is concerned, I want to thank all our guests. I want to thank all our viewers. I want to thank everyone who stopped by, everyone who tuned in. If you missed anything, check it out. iTunes, Stitcher, all those places and more. Thank you to Peter Carroll, Malki Kawa, Alexander Gustafson, Francis Ngannou, Rory McDonald, Rashad Evans, Tony McGregor, Misha Tate, Eric Anders, and, of course, the great Kayla Harrison for stopping by. Again, if you missed anything, check it out. iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, all those places and more. Back next week. Until I say peace. I'm out of here.